Tonight's episode of Shockwaves is brought to you by Fright Rags. Fright Rags is the number one source for horror t-shirts. Specially curated collections created by renowned horror artists, they offer the best art and the best quality anywhere. New this week at Fright Rags, the amazing new Jaws collection featuring a wonderful assortment of shirts, the brand new American Werewolf in London line featuring multiple shirts and awesome enamel pins. They've also just added Joe Bob Briggs merch, Monster Vision, and new Creepshow gear. Head over to www.fright-rags.com now. You can enter the code SUMMERSHOCK10 at checkout to get 10% off your entire order. Again, that's SUMMERSHOCK10 if you head over to www.fright-rags.com now.
If you're listening to our show, you know there's always more to the story, something beyond what people hear in the headlines. Over at How Stuff Works, they have a brand new show called the Control Group Podcast, and it imagines how one of these stories occurred. This isn't like any of the other shows on How Stuff Works. It's their first foray into fiction. Created by filmmaker Brett Wood, who is also a friend of Shockwaves, this is a revisionist radio drama exploring dark and dangerous territory that you won't find in traditional audio fiction. It sucks the listener into the dark and mysterious world of the 1960s when psychiatry was trying new and dangerous methods. Encouraged by a private research group, Central State Hospital's Dr. Hayes pioneers a new form of mental cleansing, a technique known today as brainwashing. When confronted by a female patient with a criminal past, he sheds his ethical restraints and intensifies these experiments, leading to unforeseen and dangerous consequences. The Control Group is based on true phenomena, illegal, ethically questionable, and historically proven experiments on innocent people. These are depictions of real-life events you won't find in textbooks. Warning, the Control Group contains scenes of realistic violence and sexuality. It is intended for mature listeners only. To hear the Control Group, listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find your favorite shows.
The Shockwaves crew is super excited to announce that we are heading to the Mad Monster Party Convention in Phoenix this July. This amazing convention runs from July 13th, which is the day this podcast airs, to the 15th at the Weekapah Resort just outside of Phoenix in Scottsdale, Arizona. Mad Monster has some other amazing guests lined up, like Robert Englund, Kane Hodder, Lance Henriksen, plus a ton of guests from the entire Elm Street franchise. And the Shockwaves team will be doing a live show on Sunday at 2 p.m. Check out madmonster.com for more info, and we can't wait to see you in Arizona.
Okay, and welcome to episode 105 of Shockwaves. I'm your host, Rob G. Sitting here with my main man, Elric Kane.
I am sitting here.
Oh, my God. You poor thing. Now you're having problems.
Dude.
Tighten the fuck up,
Kane. Problem is, if you become friends with Becky, you're going to end up in hospital.
You mean our third host, Becca McKendry, also here?
You saying I did this?
She's spreading this.
So she infected you?
She just got me so excited. All her stories are so exciting. I'm like, what's it like?
I want to go
to
the hospital?
To be admitted to emergency at 4 in the morning.
I know. And then you had to do it. And
where I don't know where that beeping is coming from, but what is it? Is it the TV? We could keep going. I don't care about that. But that was actually God
telling you. Okay. He's telling you to drink more water, Kane.
Well,
drink it.
It was 4 a.m. and I woke up and thought I'd thrown out my back, and I was like, oh, that hurts my back. And then I started walking around, couldn't get comfortable, and I realized, oh, that's not my back. It's like next to my back. Had no idea what the hell was going on. Of course, Google ends up taking you to down dark roads, and drove myself at like 4:30 in the
morning. Cancer? Yeah, heart attack. Those are the two I always get.
The only good thing about these things is they scan your body and realize all the other organs were good, so that's good. But no, it was a kidney stone, but I was in so much pain. It's not even funny. And I was like hooked up to the EKG and morphine, and it was a pretty, for me, because like, see, this is old hat to you.
I've never had morphine in my life.
No, I know, but old hat going to hospitals. I think I've only gone like a couple times, especially emergency.
But see, I go to hospitals for my lungs.
Things that you know.
My lungs suck. If I ever had anything else go on, I would not know what to do. Like if I broke a bone or something, I would be like, oh God, I'm going to die. If it's my lungs, I know how to deal with it. So.
But it doesn't help when nurses come in. They go, oh, it's very much like going through labor. Yeah, the pain you'll have, it's very, as close as a man will ever know, and you just look at the person and go, ooh.
Yeah, but they gave you morphine, so
well, they
shut
did
the
them,
fuck up.
I mean, so it's been intermittent, but I didn't know if I'd make it to this one, and sorry if you heard our advertisement for Phoenix, and if I'm not there, you'll understand why. I'm hoping to be there. But we'll see.
I'm hoping you pass by the time we get there. Yeah. Sorry for you.
You're happy and you look okay today.
Today was actually shitty. But right now I'm okay. So yeah.
I can see the pain in your face.
It just throws you off.
And you're sitting very uncomfortable right now.
Yeah. Like, well, as I was explaining to Becca, it's like somebody's hand is like inside your back just kind of squeezing you. And you're like, oh, stop squeezing me. Yeah. Weird God thing.
How do I get rid of that?
And I will say the one thing that I kept thinking about when I was in hospital, because also my heart rate started to crash. I was like, what? Is this it? Like a fucking kidney stone? I'm just done?
It's more like shock. Like it was.
It was in shock. But I kept thinking about Cronenberg. Because I kept thinking, oh, it's like up to 40, it's like your body's your lover and is in love with you and you can do anything to it and it wants you. And then as soon as you turn 40, it's like now you have to woo your body. Your body's done with you. It's like, oh, nope, sorry, over you. And now everything I'm going to have to do in the future is to win you over and give you lots of water and vegetables, apparently, not beetroot, I guess. So I keep thinking of Cronenberg movies, how they're all about your body turning on you. And I think that's where we're at.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think
Becca's not. She's young. And
I think Ryan Turek is your kidney stone.
he's
not here today. He's instead,
But the worst part of getting sick is when all your friends start writing to you their horror stories of having the same thing, which are far worse than what you're going through, and it makes you really scared. So thanks, guys. Thanks, Jim Koons.
Wow.
yours was particularly scary.
Well, all right. We have a hell of a show for you.
Mixing it up.
Shit, it's Friday the 13th, I just realized.
Oh, that's awesome.
I should mention that out right now, shameless plug, is the Kane Hodder documentary, Tell and Back.
Oh, but I won't see it until Tuesday.
Yeah,
you won't see it until Tuesday because we're doing a screening here in Los Angeles on Tuesday the 17th. But if you have, iTunes, Amazon, the whole deal, you could rent it right now digitally, or you could buy the fancy Blu-ray, which I just gifted you guys, which comes out Friday the 13th today.
Thank you.
Nice.
So there you go. So check that out. And we will be, hopefully by the time you hear this, we will be in Arizona, hopefully all of us.
You're
kidney
definitely
stone
going.
Pending.
Yeah, I'm definitely going no matter
regardless.
What. I'm going to be at the – we have a table for Dread Central and Epic Pictures, and Kane is there this weekend. So it's basically your first chance to buy the Blu-ray in person and go meet him and have him sign it if you want. We got some cool limited edition posters that we made of Kane and the guys from Terrifier, both – Damien Leone, the director of Terrifier, and David Thornton Howard, who plays Art the Clown. And I'm actually excited because he's doing a photo op on Saturday. And so I will not rest until I get a photo of Art the Clown on my lap.
Oh, nice, on your lap. Wow.
Yeah. Awesome. That's the kind of relationship we have.
Robert England's not doing a Freddy thing, right?
I don't think he's doing a Freddy thing, but I think he is a guest there for the weekend.
Yeah, but he's not doing
a photo op. Yeah, Kane's doing two Jason photo ops. One as Hell Jason from the Friday 13th video game.
The
Savini design. And then on Sunday, he's 8-bit Jason.
Oh, shit. With
that
the purple?
Kind of wacky.
See if you can get an in for us with that one.
Oh, sure.
Oh, the whole three of us with that photo would be pretty cool.
That would be amazing.
Probably I could be like, hey, man, I just put out your life story.
Yeah, you think
we can get a photo?
I deserve it.
He'll give you half price, probably.
The irony is I haven't spoken to him once this whole time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which is kind of, So hopefully we'll see you all this weekend. Should be fun. Friday 13th.
I have no idea what we're talking about before.
you lost your train of thought.
Wait, where were we?
So what have we seen in the last week?
Well, I do have to say that Elric's illness finally convinced me to come to Santa Clarita to watch a movie with him and Dick.
Oh.
It's rare to get anyone to drive out.
I know. Like, it takes a lot for me to drive to Santa Clarita. But Elric not able to move and in the hospital, I was like, okay, fine. So we watched Alien Predator.
Alien
Predators.
I told her when she's coming, oh, Alien Predator. She goes, yeah, I've seen that with Lance Henriksen and everyone. And I'm like, no, not Aliens versus Predator. This is some movie called, and I pulled up the cover and none of us had ever heard of this thing.
Yeah.
How did you get it?
Scream Factory.
Scream Factory. Whoa. Dick found
and
it.
And Dick bought it and he had heard it was great. And I was like, really? But then when I read the back, it actually sounded like a total Becca movie. So I was kind of excited about the whole thing.
And it was a total Becca movie.
I think Rob will like this one a lot.
Rob, you do need to see this one.
It's very 80s.
It's batshit crazy, just bonkers stuff. It really does feel like multiple movies kind of mesh together.
Okay, 1987.
Yeah.
Never heard of it.
And you're going to recognize a ton of the actors and actresses in it. It is three people, two guys and a girl, are traveling through Spain on some type of, like, is it spring break or are they graduating?
I think they've just finished either high school or college, but it's a Fade to Black guy. What's his name?
Oh, Dennis Christopher.
Yeah, Dennis Christopher. And so it's really, he's great in it.
Yeah, he plays like the class clown, and he's doing impressions through the whole thing, so it does feel kind of Fade to Black because every couple of minutes he does another weird movie impression. Mm-hmm. And so it's these three people traveling through Spain in an RV on some type of, like, we just graduated vacation.
And two guys and a girl.
So
they both kind of like her, and she's like, but we're all just friends. And they're both, obviously, the whole time, just thinking about which one of them's going to try
but
to get her.
But then at odd times, they insult her.
Yeah, I was like, honey, I don't know why you're with either of these guys.
But they're traveling through Spain, and they roll, like, something happens with their RV, and they have to get apart, so they roll into this really weird town. And they can tell that immediately, like, everybody's, there's something off about them. There's, like, kind of weird rage things going on.
Well, there's an awesome waitress
the cafe scene.
Waitress looks like the crazy lady from Rocky Horror.
She looks like Magenta from Rocky
Horror.
Yeah,
and the hair straight up, and, like, puts her fingers in their glasses of water as she serves them, and you're just like, what is this movie? It's basically like a strict 80s buddy comedy, like with all the trappings and actual humor, like purposeful jokes that work. And then you're like, and then it cuts to these weird stories about a NASA alien science experiment gone wrong, which is very serious.
Which is weird because at first they set the NASA alien thing up feels more like kind of like a gangster movie where it's like these weird kind of crime syndicate guys. Mm-hmm. But then it's like that you can tell that they've been experimenting on aliens and oh no, it may have escaped. And then it goes to the town and the town feels really Messiah of Evil with a tinge of Tourist Trap mixed in there. And
I think it's a super fun movie. I don't know if it's a good horror movie. Like, it's an okay. I said the horror is not the part that I really walked away. I kind of just enjoyed the dynamics
of
the characters.
It has some cool effects.
Yeah, there's a couple cool moments.
Yeah.
But I definitely liked it. I think this is like one that's a bit of a sleeper for people who, like us, had never even seen this cover.
Yeah, I've never heard of this in any capacity. And Dick said that he had seen it in the 80s, but I had definitely never seen this. But yeah, it does function like an 80s kind of Tom Hanksy buddy comedy. Oh yeah, and there's a weird town of people and some aliens
and a couple thing ripoffs.
Yeah,
like with the effects where they're trying to rip off like little moments of the thing, the creature itself. You know,
yeah.
But no, I would recommend this one. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
Wow,
I think you'll like it. I mean, with your bad movie group, that would be a fun one to watch.
Man.
Oh yeah. And this one, it's got some awful lines and some really awkward scenes, too, where all of a sudden you're just like, I don't know what just happened. It didn't mesh with the rest of the movie.
I much preferred it to the movie I talked about on here last week.
I'm going to bring that up.
That's
because
what I figured.
I took it home and watched it with Josh Miller, one of my Bad Movie Brigade.
Yeah.
And you're, of course, talking about the new Asylum, the new Arrow release, Doom Asylum. Which I had never heard of. It's
none of us had, right?
Your description was very, very, very accurate. And I thought that I'd like that. Patty Mullen, Frankenhooker is in it. She plays two roles.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
And she's got that thick, like, Long Island accent. Kirsten Davis from Sex and the City.
Yeah. Playing a nerd.
But she's awful. Like, I remember thinking, it was like, whoever cast Sex and the City obviously did not see this movie. Because it's like we were literally like so in awe. Like, we're like, this is like unforgivable.
Yeah.
But like, you know, there's a lot of weird stuff. Yeah, it is. It's super campy and it's kind of funny. Basically, this guy gets in a car accident and loses the love of his life. And then.
But what about when he dies? It's like, have you ever been this happy? I've never been this happy.
I know,
we're
right
be
before,
and then boom, boom.
it's so weird because he looks one way after the car crash. Yeah. And then you see his autopsy where all of a sudden, like, half his skin is missing.
He looked totally fine after
the
crash.
Yeah, you're like, what happened here? Why does he look like that all of a sudden?
Yeah.
And anyway, it becomes kind of like a Phantom of the Opera style deal. But so a group of kids go to a warehouse, an abandoned warehouse, and then there's like these three really obnoxious.
Well, I think,
like,
it's an asylum, right?
Oh yeah, that makes sense.
I mean,
sense,
I don't know why.
The
title,
yeah.
But I don't know.
I guess
know
it's
why.
An abandoned asylum, and yeah, so they go there, and like there's the three rocker chicks who, by the way, whatever music is playing is not at all reflective.
Yeah.
It was like some weird, like, almost electronic thing. And I remember Josh is like, you're not playing the drums.
Yeah.
It's like the girl's like hitting stuff, but it's like, that's not drums. And then she keeps fantasizing about the other dude in the, there's like shots of them running towards each other in a field. And you're like, what am I watching? What is this? Is this funny? Is this?
Wow.
Yeah. But yeah. So, and then the guy, the main character, the whatever the evil guy is, the coroner.
The coroner.
He starts showing up, and it's as bad, if not worse, than you described, where there's a one-liner that the person says before they die, and then he punctuates that with another one-liner. So there's almost like 2-3 one-liners per every kill.
Yeah. It's pretty brutal.
And like, oh, wow. The best thing I could say is it's a brisk 80 minutes or whatever it is. Yeah. It's super, super quick.
Doesn't
but then
feel
I went,
brisk.
I went, yeah. And then I went on the good old IMDb.
Uh-oh.
And one of their connections, which is sort of like trivia or like movie mentions. Because there's a lot of another movie in there. And like a little too much of some black and white movie and that he's watching
right.
on
that's
the
right,
TV.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And Josh and I were like, what is this? Is this like, how does it even play into the movie? Yeah. Why are we spending so much time watching this other movie that's not the movie? And so we thought it must be some significance. It's not. There's like five movies from the 30s or 40s that are plugged in there or whatever.
Story.
You know, like whatever. But in connections on IMDb, it says, did you know that the coroner is almost identical, is identical to Freddy Krueger? I'm like, okay. I was like, do you think he's identical?
Even close.
Where's the hat? Nope.
Yeah,
red and green sweater?
Burns,
no.
Maybe.
No glove? Like, no glove. I don't know if they know
maybe
what the word
one-liners.
Identical means.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this is kind of awful. But I did rather enjoy, there was a featurette, there's a couple of features on there, but there was a featurette with Vince Costini, who is an effects artist out here. He's been in the business for many, many years, and this is like one of his first gig.
Oh, that's
and
awesome.
So there's a good interview with him kind of talking about how things went wrong and how things went right, etc. There's one good drill bit that really is kind of the best kill on the whole thing. And he's like, that's the one that went right. So yeah, it's an all right disc. I mean, approach with caution. Me, who loves these kind of like goofy horror comedies, I was kind of like,
I'm putting it in my Microwave Massacre category.
Is it? There you go.
It's not as bad by any means for me, but it's
right,
in
but
that
it's
same.
Kind of in that realm where you got to be really in the mood for it.
It's and not won over to the mutilator lane. Not yet.
Yeah. So what else you guys got?
Here you go.
I saw the new Purge film.
Oh.
Yeah, which was really cool, the first Purge. So I watched it at Universal on the lot because I'm teaching a class through USC. And so literally the day before it came out, they filed all my students in and showed them the new movie, which was awesome. And the students all loved it. And it was just a blast. This one is a lot more heavy-handed than the rest. Not that the rest are subtle in any capacity.
That's kind of how the story's
I mean, the first one definitely is a little bit more, I'll say, economical, like you definitely see it's like upper middle classes versus not upper middle class. And then the second one gets a little bit more into the underbelly, and then by the third it gets really political. This one just pretty much slaps you over the face with it. Like there's that's all there is. It is 100% clear exactly what they're trying to say. And this, the whole setup of this one, and I really did enjoy the setup of the experiment and how the first Purge came about, because they really did make it seem not like it's possible, but it was somewhat feasible. It was like Handmaid's Tale, where you're watching it going, this could never happen, but I kind of feel like it could happen. So it did feel somewhat plausible to a certain degree. The whole setup was that, this new political group had come in, the new founding fathers, and they were running a test group, a behavioral science test group, and they're doing it on Staten Island. Hmm. And if people stay for the experiment, they get $5,000. And if people leave, they get nothing. So you can leave. You can just leave Staten Island for the night. You get nothing. That's fine. But if you stay and you are an active participant in the first night, you get $5,000. And so they set it up as people are willing to do this just because, you know, that's a lot of money for people, and that, you know, that's in this impoverished area. And it goes through a couple of different families and kind of how the family members are making the decision. So you see, it focuses around a brother and sister where the sister is protesting it, saying, how can we do this? This is inhumane. How can you even think about it? And the brother, who is fighting to keep him and his sister afloat because they live by themselves, and he agrees to participate just so he can get the $5,000. And so it's a really interesting setup. And then once it gets started, I enjoyed the experiment level because they really do explore kind of how people proceed. So people are still on the island. The purge begins. Everyone who's there is getting $5,000. And they explore that nothing happens for the first few hours. No one does anything. And then after about 3 hours, there's a purge block party. And everybody is out there like dancing and having like a giant party. And then how the first killing happens. And then how the second, and how it starts with looting. Like people start looting. And then it goes to ATM machines. And then from there, and kind of how it progresses and just kind of breaks down all societal law. So it was really cool stuff that went into this one. I do also have to say, one of the cool things that they did, the participants of the Purge, they set it up that they want to record and document what's going on. So they give them all these like glowing contacts. So everyone who was involved in the purge has these like really sinister glowing eyes in this one. It was
pretty
cool.
Which we can expect to see at Halloween Horror Nights, I'm sure.
Yeah, no doubt. Sure. Yeah. They were like bright blue glowing eyes in it. So yeah, there was, and again, this, not that the other ones are subtle in any capacity, but this one, it is just literally saying the government is damning the poor, the lower classes. Like it is, it's just out there. But that said, I had fun watching it. It's not as, I'll say, fun as the others. I mean, it still has a lot of costuming and a lot of kind of the performative stuff of The Purge where people are putting on masks, but that comes on a lot more slowly. And you don't have kind of like in some of the other purges, they get into like the, well, fuck it, I'm going to get creative with my kills. It's not like that in this one. It's literally just kind of brutality. So
yeah, I haven't heard much about this new one.
Yeah, no, I haven't.
One
either.
Way or another. I still think the second one is my favorite.
I love
three.
The second one, yeah.
I think they're like all the well directed. I think that sometimes it's the writing needs more nuance. And, but I think about the story you're talking about, I'm like, oh, imagine if that's a Sidney Lumet movie about the origins, like, and it's all gritty, like, yeah. Dog Day Afternoon-ish. You could totally go
See,
that
that's
way.
What this felt like The Wave to me, if you've seen that movie.
I know what it is, but yeah. I haven't seen that one.
It felt like it's much more of kind of a darker film about a social experiment where the first one, you know, it's centered in the house. The second two get into much more of kind of like the creativity of people going out and kind of purging and going crazy for a night. This one is much more about the social experiment and the ramifications of it and how we ourselves are able to kind of go from I would never participate in that to, okay, well, maybe I'd steal a TV to, no, I'm going to fucking kill you just in the course of several hours. So it's an interesting film. I had fun with it.
Okay. I saw a couple things. I saw one that I know you caught up with on the Becca. It's a Becca favorite, but I know you caught up when you were doing all your anthologies. I finally saw Quiet On, a movie for some reason I've never done. It's 3 hours, and it was a whole one of the days where I was in pain. I'm like, I'm just going to sit here and catch up on some stuff. So I borrowed a Blu-ray of Quiet On, and I really loved the first two stories a lot. And I don't know if you pointed this out, but I'm going to bet you did. Did you point out that the Lady in the Snow was basically the Tales from the Dark Side story? Where, you know, promise me you'll never...
Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't know about that.
I feel like, that's something you might have, but it's definitely the origin of that story.
It's the same gargoyle story.
Yeah, it's basically he meets a woman who saves his life in the snow, or spares his life, rather, in the snow. She's like the snow, snow ghost, I guess, who takes the life of his friend and says, I'm going to spare you, but if you ever tell anyone, even your wife or your mom... You will die. And then, of course, he ends up years later meeting a beautiful woman, having kids with her. And then he one day tells her, his wife. And, of course, there's a twist.
That is the same story.
It's the exact same
story.
So that was cool. And there's a great one about black hair. The first one I think is really eerie. But then because it's 3 hours, you know, when you're dealing with an anthology, I mean, the whole thing's just gorgeous. An amazing movie. But I found myself a little less engaged in the last act, which was like a good hour. So it almost feels like a feature tacked on to two great shorts. And that's the cover art that you've always seen with the Japanese inscriptions on the guys all over the guy's body.
That one's like 40 minutes long.
It's just
too.
Long.
It's just
and
long.
It's still beautiful, but I was kind of looking for something like a modern creepy ghost story from Japan, and it wasn't. So it was just kind of it was the wrong thing for the mood I was looking for, but it's a beautiful movie. And then I saw a new movie though that I've been really looking forward to seeing, Thoroughbreds.
Oh yeah, I've heard a lot about that one.
It's the last film, I guess, of Anton Yelchin. He's an Anna Lily Taylor. Is that how you say her name? Mm-hmm. From The Witch. This is an interesting movie. I thought from the trailer, it looks really funny and stuff. It's written to be like Heathers, almost exactly like it. But what if Heathers wasn't funny, and it's just the darkness remains? And I've got to say, I liked it. But I walked away going, man, this is one of the coldest movies I've ever seen. Like everyone's cold. I don't like any of these people. Like I'm a little put off by all three of these kind of key characters. I think it's a really great debut. Anton Yelchin totally steals it. I think he's fantastic in it. He has a really good – he's kind of like – it's basically two wealthy girls who haven't been friends for a while. You don't know why, but it turns out it's because one of them had killed their pet horse when they were like 14. You don't know why, but in a brutal way, like with a knife. And you're like, okay, that's crazy. They come back together to do some study. You don't really get it. And then one of them suggests, hey, have you ever thought about just killing your stepdad who's a complete asshole? And she's like, no. And then eventually she comes around to the idea, maybe we could. And so one's kind of got no kind of no empathy, one of the characters, so she might be good at that. And then the other one's just kind of, there's something missing from both these characters. I think it's a very beautifully made film, really well written, but there's just something that keeps you at arm's length, where you're like, I can't love this movie because of the kind of the coldness and sterile nature. But it's, you know, definitely very close to Heather's in terms of its inspiration.
Huh. See, that's how I felt about Tragedy Girls.
Oh, interesting, yeah. So that has more cackling one-liners, though, clearly for comedy, if
yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean.
So that is more humor, too.
Yeah, this is so dry, but it's really well-realized. Everyone's great in it. So this is the kind of movie some people are going to absolutely love it. It's going to, like, it'll probably end up on top lists. Not necessarily horror, because it's a bit more crime or something, but for Anton, man, watch it, because he's, you know, he's such a great actor, and it's, but he's fun, because he's, like, the kind of dopey local drug dealer who gets pulled into, they try to use him into their scheme to knock the guy off, and so that's actually pretty fun.
Wow. And I love Olivia Cooke, who was in Bates Motel,
and I did a double feature of her accidentally, because afterwards I watched the Spielberg film, Ready Player One.
Yeah. Shining sequence is worth it.
The Shining sequence for me, like, this is where I was in the most pain. So I was like, I need a movie that will distract me. And it totally is distracting, because it's just so poppy.
Yeah.
But that sequence was like, that's one of the coolest things I've seen this year, that part.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty terrific.
For a horror fan, that was good fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
What else did you see, Rob?
Well, so this isn't horror, but I definitely wanted to mention it. So first of all, Netflix is just overdoing it with their content. I cannot even keep up with shows that I actually want to see.
And they just get, you never even know they're there.
Yeah, I was going to talk about The Forest on there.
Yeah, there's new seasons of things, and I forget. I'm like, oh crap, there's a whole new season waiting for me, and I can't get to it because there's three other shows that I haven't gotten to.
Yeah, like I was watching The Forest this week, and I noticed Glow popped up, and I will binge Glow in 2 days.
Yeah, but I already finished Glow. Glow's terrific. But what I did see that I was curious about was a new show called Safe from Harlan Coben, and the main reason is because it's Michael C. Hall, and it's only 8 episodes, and I'm like, oh, cool. I love Michael. I think he's a great actor. And it's more on the thriller side. It's a little bit of, I don't even want to call it a murder mystery, but I guess that's the best description. The thing is this, though, and it's going to catch you off guard right away. It's British. Hmm. It's a British show, so the entire cast is British, which means Michael C. Hall does a British accent the whole time. Now, it's flawless. He's great. But it's that first episode, as good as it is, it's really hard to accept Dexter doing a British accent. The entire time, I was like, oh, man, he's really going to do it the whole time, huh? You know, because the first time he speaks, I'm like, oh, is he just being funny? And I'm like, oh, no. Oh, wait, everybody in this show is British. So it is a British series, but by the end of episode one, because they're all about 45 minutes to an hour, by the end of episode one, because the first one ends on kind of, they kind of set up a mystery about his daughter going missing. He's a widower that, you know, is also a surgeon, and he's got a turbulent relationship with her daughter. She goes to a party. She's with some kind of sleazy boyfriend, and then she doesn't come home. And so basically that's the thrust of the first episode. And so by the end of it, they kind of drop almost every episode I've seen so far, and I'm about four in, has some sort of kind of twist or cliffhanger at the end that you're like, oh, okay, that's cool. Because basically everyone's secrets start to unravel the more and more they dig into this one thing, which is him just trying to find his daughter. And so I was actually kind of into it. And by the second episode, I was not bothered by his accent anymore at all. I just think it's kind of amazing. But you know what? I feel like a lot of people had that problem starting Dexter for the first time, associating him with his character from 6 Feet Under, and being it's really hard to separate it. But he's damn good. Yeah. He could do it. So, yeah, it's called Safe, and it's on Netflix right now.
So nice. This can be our Netflix round. You had a Netflix
show? Yeah, I actually have two shows, one on Netflix and one not. And the setup is kind of similar for both of them. So I watched The Forest on Netflix. I'm only 2 episodes in. This is a French show on Netflix right now. And if you log into Netflix, they're like doing all types of splashy campaigns for it right now. And it's about 3 teen girls who go missing in a forest near a really small French town. And kind of everyone's take on it, and then the cops exploration, and I'm only 2 episodes in, so I can't say exactly how it's set up, but so far it's set up very similar, where every, you know, couple of, you get little tidbits about the town and things like that. And then similarly, I watched the new Blumhouse TV show on HBO, Sharp Objects.
I only watched the
first episode of that one. I love Amy Adams. Like, I will watch her in anything. Sharp Objects has the same setup where Amy Adams plays a journalist. She is back in a very small town in what state is it in? Minnesota?
Missouri.
Missouri.
Yeah.
Missouri.
Wind something.
Yeah, wind gap or something like that. And a child has gone missing, or I think it's supposed to be like a teenager. Has gone missing, and the whole town is like looking for her.
And it's the second in a few months.
Yep, second in like 3 months. And so Amy Adams is there as a journalist researching what's going on, but she used to live there. So you're getting the story of what's going on in present day, along with kind of her weird, disjointed memories of what it was like growing up in this town and understanding that something seems to have happened to her best friend.
Yeah. And, her sister, you mean?
Her sister.
When she was young, mm-hmm. passed away, and it's all done in flashbacks. But they definitely imply that this is going to be a serial killer show.
Yep.
It's implied very minorly in there, but I think that's probably the direction. I haven't read it, but I liked it. I like the style of it. And I agree with you. Amy Adams is very, you know, she's just really interesting. They've definitely stripped her back. It's not to make her look amazing and all made up. She's like, you know,
looks really casual. Kind of she's not made to look pretty in this. She's wearing sweats for most of it. And the show, it's a little mumbly, I will say. Like, that kind of bothered
that's
me.
Right, you said.
Yeah. Everybody is kind of, it's very soft spoken. Like, at one point, I had my volume up on my television, and then afterwards I watched like The Daily Show or something, and I was like, oh my god, I had jacked up the volume to hear it, because everyone, it was very soft spoken. I love the soundtrack. There's a lot of Zeppelin in it. It's really kind of classic rock soundtrack.
And this is a Gillian Flynn novel, mm-hmm. so the same person who wrote what's the Ben Affleck thing, the one with Ben Affleck and David Fincher and
Gone Girl.
So it's like one of those bestsellers.
Yeah.
So I watched because of Stephen King. Stephen King tweeted on Friday about this movie called Caliber that just hit Netflix, and he was like, "This is, you know, it's got elements of Kill List, and this thing's so crazy. What a great movie!" So he loved it. So I instantly go, "All right, I'll give it a shot." Because you know, to be honest, that's the thing with Netflix. That's why Netflix should hire us to, you know, like all these sites should hire us to be telling people what to watch, right? Because you have no idea what's worth your time.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just a bunch of titles and a picture, and you have to like spin the roulette. So it has some similarities to The Ritual, but The Ritual, I've got to say, might surprise you. The Ritual still my favorite horror film of the year. Honestly, even slightly above Hereditary and Slight. There's something about it that I really like that movie. And I want to see it again before I commit to that. But this has the setup of that, which is two buddies. One is just his girlfriend's fiance has just gotten pregnant. It's set in Scottish Highlands. That's why it probably seems similar. A friend he hasn't seen for a while, kind of a little estranged, comes to pick him up, and they're going to go hunting, even though the one guy doesn't even like hunting and doesn't want to go hunting. But you know, it's his last gasp of freedom. It's treated really serious. It's very little I'm going to be able to say about it because within about 15 minutes, the kind of key inciting thing happens. And if I even gave that away, it would just color everything.
What was the name of this again?
It's called Caliber. And it's basically, they go up to this place in the middle of nowhere hunting, and you'll recognize some of the other characters, maybe from some character actors from Scotland. And something happens in this small town. And they even go into the pub that I am pretty sure it's Slaughtered Lamb. I'm pretty sure they actually used the real sign of the Slaughtered Lamb and everything from American Werewolf. But it's so fucking dark. Like, look, man, and you know this, Rob, right? I like dark and I can handle bleak, right? This is actually maybe too bleak for me. I kept writing to Dick because he's the one who said, oh, I've got to watch that movie, and he didn't watch it yet. And I was like, I don't even – at about 20 minutes, I was like, oh my god, something happens that's so bleak that I'm like, I don't know, man. And I kept writing back going, I'll tell you how it ends. Then we'll know how bleak. And I'm like, the ending's even bleak. So
what happened to Solange bleak
It's just like the two guys are likable. I wouldn't say you love them. They get into a situation where they're really in deep shit and they're trying to cover their tracks. And you know, something from an accident happens, but it goes really, really dark. I think some people are going to – it's really well made. That's the thing. It's on a – kind of like Thoroughbreds. On a technical level, it's so well made. I think the reason I prefer saying like The Ritual is because there's also a supernatural element. So there's this fantastic that I can then not – like kind of like your aversion to home invasion movies. I can escape a little bit.
Yeah.
But there's no escape in this movie. So it's cool. I don't think I – you look up Stephen King's tweet. He compares it even to like Wicker Man and things like that. I definitely wouldn't go there, but I think some people will really dig it. Just for me, might have been a little too much, you know. And it doesn't make me want to rewatch it, you know. I'd watch the next thing by the guy.
So in addition to all that fun Netflix stuff, I watched Piranha 2, which is coming soon from Scream Factory.
The Wings.
Piranha's the thing. I had completely forgotten this. All I knew is that it was James Cameron and the Piranhas flew. And I had like hot flashes of it from my childhood, but could remember very little else. What shocked me the most was young Lance Henriksen. I completely forgot that he is in it, but he plays the kind of like lead cop guy in it and is the youngest I think I've ever seen him. I'm sure he acted before this, but
it's probably around when he started emerging. I can't remember, but we'd have to listen to that old episode we did with him way back in Killer POV. Yeah. Remember?
I don't.
That was
all I remember was that story where he met Lee Marvin. He was like in a town jail or something, and he was a young kid, and Lee Marvin like encouraged him to act or something.
Yeah.
And because he couldn't read, remember?
He had
to teach himself off cereal boxes or something crazy like that.
I do have to say that the disappointing thing about this one is you do not see the piranhas, and they do not even really use the word piranha until almost it's like halfway through the movie. Yeah. And considering it's called Piranha 2, like we know what we're going in for, but they have the first initial death, and then there's like two more. And it's all around this sunken ship. There's like this sunken ship that people keep exploring and scuba diving near, and then oops, somebody else died. And then halfway through is when somebody finally says, you know, they were experimenting on piranha. And so it took a really long time to get there. Once the piranha show up, it's awesome. Shit's flying. There's, you know, piranha chewing their way through people. Overall, this one is so much less serious. Like most of the characters in Piranha 2, they're caricatures. Like the girls, you know, there's the sinister girls who are trying to lure the mentally retarded boy. It's just, there's just really bad, trite character situations that happen throughout where, you know, it's the sinister guy who's trying to cover it up, and then the altruistic woman with a single mom with a son who's trying to save the day. It feels a lot more trite than the first one. But that said, it's fun. Way less serious. A lot of the characters in this are assholes. Like, there's really the only one or two people that you can side with. The rest of them, you're just like, man, everyone at this resort is just awful.
But when I was a kid, I thought they could fly.
They can.
Because of this movie. I'm pretty sure, I just assumed they could, like, leap out and kind of do a little flutter.
Well, they set it up. They definitely try to make a comparison that it's the Grunion, because they talk about how, you know, it's tourism and the Grunion are coming and all these fish are going to come up and have sex on sand and people are going to scoop them up and eat them. And that, you know, and that's why it's the spawning, is that the piranha have all come to spawn on the sand, but they can fly. So why not do it in the air too? So yeah.
Wow. But have you rewatched this one?
No, I just got it in the mail. I've never seen it before.
Oh, really?
I don't think I've never seen the second one. No.
Definitely saw that.
But it sounds like this is what Alex Aja remade, huh?
Yeah, probably. I didn't see the original. I probably saw this one when I was a kid.
Yeah, this is a lot closer to where, you know, Alex Aja went with it. Because the first one's very serious. I mean, it's all about, you know, experiments, and we're going to put them in the Vietnam River, and now they're attacking summer camps. And
it's a straight Jaws rip.
There's
really,
very little humor in the first one. Like, everybody's serious, and the old man dies. And yeah, this one is far more like, everyone at this resort is horrible, and now they're all dying. And yeah, it's fun, but the characters are a little bit more caricature-y.
All right.
So yeah.
You got any others?
No, man, I actually watched a lot of non-genre stuff this week. Okay. So that's all I got for you.
I can't respect that. I got a gem. Like, actually, this is going to go down in one of the best discoveries of the year. This one's definitely thanks to Dick. A movie I'd never even heard of, and I think we just lent it to Becca. It's called City of the Dead.
Yep, I cannot wait to watch.
Not City of the Living Dead. So City of the Dead, it's 1960, and this movie is like a perfect freaking little gem. It is an eerie cross between a Mario Bava film like Kill Baby Kill or I'm trying to think which other ones it reminded me of. Oh, well, obviously Black Sunday. And a little bit of Carnival of Souls. It's black and white photography that is just – this Blu-ray is just gorgeous. So this is a movie I think that mustn't have had much of a profile because I've never heard of it. And now it's got this beautiful Blu-ray release. Christopher Lee plays a professor just at the start of the movie, and he has a student who's very peppy. The only stuff that's a little dated is there's these parts with like kind of, you know, jazzy late 50s kids.
Yeah.
But he recommends this girl oh, you're interested in witchcraft, you should go to this town somewhere in Massachusetts where, you know, there's a very famous witch burning, which is the opening scene in the movie. The opening of the scene in the movie is very much like Black Sunday, and it's really intense and interesting. And then she goes down there, and everything's shot there. It's obviously on a studio set, and it's all rolling fog, black and white. It just looks gorgeous. And then it's got that eerie Carnival of Souls feeling because all the people will stare at you in the town, and it's super weird, and you don't get it. So she checks into this this inn where you realize the woman running the inn was that witch from the opening scene who was burnt to death. And really, you know, some eerie goings-ons about sacrifices. And there's a great line, like, when the clock strikes 13, so they have their own thing where you wait till it's hit 12, and then it goes one more, and that's when the sacrifice has to happen. Chris Lee isn't in it much. He's kind of bookends the film, but everything in the middle of this film where the main woman goes down there to kind of investigate is really beautiful. And it's like, it's just one of those movies. You're like, where has this movie been? Like, huh. you would think people would be talking about it, but, the as good a reason to buy this disc, honestly, I think this would be a good blind buy for some people. There is a, like, 1 hour interview with Christopher Lee from about 10 years ago. He had just started, he had just shot Lord of the Rings, but it hadn't come out, with Brad Stevens, who's a pretty good, interesting film historian in the UK and does a lot of genre stuff. And he just goes for it, man. It's just like a freewheeling 1 hour conversation. I don't even think they mentioned the title of this movie in this interview.
Wow.
They talk about all his work. He talks about what he thinks is the problem of the state of movies. He talks about the greatest directors he's ever worked with. It is fascinating. Like, it's just that I didn't even intend to watch it. I kind of pushed it. Oh, what is this old looking kind of crappy interview? Because it has this kind of old, cheap video aesthetic. And then I was just like, this is brilliant. Christopher Lee's just like laying it all online. So if you're a Chris Lee fan and want to hear his thoughts on everything, this is worth picking up. But this is one of those like gems that you come across and go, wow, I'm surprised people aren't talking about this movie. And it would definitely be one of my picks of the year to watch, you know, especially just for great set pieces. It's nothing radically new, but it's really, really beautifully shot.
Yeah, I'm curious because I recognize there's a disc that came out a little while ago, and now there's like a new limited edition version. So I'm trying to let's do a little bit of reading. And then there's an Arrow version, which is a region B only.
Oh, I didn't
so
know.
So there's a lot.
I watched is the bottom one that you're looking at.
Oh, there. This one? Yeah. Okay. So he watched the one that's listed as the limited edition, which has got like zombie faces all around the cover.
But yeah, seriously. Yeah. And that's missed. There's no zombies in this movie, so I don't know what that's about. It's a satanic witchcraft cult kind of movie. So that's
gotcha.
That's the idea. So and they don't hide that much, but it's really good. So I definitely recommend that one.
All right. Cool. Well, that's all I got. Becca, Denny, anything else before we go into our exciting segment this episode?
Nope. Let's get started. The guests are here.
Ooh. I'm still not in pain. This is good.
Tonight's episode of Shockwaves is brought to you by Fright Rags. Fright Rags is the number one source for horror t-shirts. Specially curated collections created by renowned horror artists, they offer the best art and the best quality anywhere. New this week at Fright Rags, the amazing new Jaws collection featuring a wonderful assortment of shirts, the brand new American Werewolf in London line featuring multiple shirts and awesome enamel pins. They've also just added Joe Bob Briggs merch, Monster Vision, and new Creepshow gear. Head over to www.fright-rags.com now. You can enter the code SUMMERSHOCK10 at checkout to get 10% off your entire order. Again, that's SUMMERSHOCK10. If you head over to www.fright-rags.com now.
If you're listening to our show, you know there's always more to the story, something beyond what people hear in the headlines. Over at How Stuff Works, they have a brand new show called the Control Group Podcast, and it imagines how one of these stories occurred. This isn't like any of the other shows on How Stuff Works. It's their first foray into fiction. Created by filmmaker Brett Wood, who is also a friend of Shockwaves, this is a revisionist radio drama exploring dark and dangerous territory that you won't find in traditional audio fiction. It sucks the listener into the dark and mysterious world of the 1960s when psychiatry was trying new and dangerous methods. Encouraged by a private research group, Central State Hospital's Dr. Hayes pioneers a new form of mental cleansing, a technique known today as brainwashing. When confronted by a female patient with a criminal past, he sheds his ethical restraints and intensifies these experiments.
leading to unforeseen and dangerous consequences. The control group is based on true phenomena, illegal, ethically questionable, and historically proven experiments on innocent people. These are depictions of real-life events you won't find in textbooks. Warning, the control group contains scenes of realistic violence and sexuality. It is intended for mature listeners only. To hear the control group, listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find your favorite shows.
The Shuck Waves crew is super excited to announce that we are heading to the Mad Monster Party Convention in Phoenix this July. This amazing convention runs from July 13th, which is the day this podcast airs, to the 15th at the Wekapa Resort just outside of Phoenix in Scottsdale, Arizona. Mad Monster has some other amazing guests lined up, like Robert Englund, Kane Hodder, Lance Henriksen, plus a ton of guests from the entire Elm Street franchise. And the Shuck Waves team will be doing a live show on Sunday at 2 p.m. Check out madmonster.com for more info, and we can't wait to see you in Arizona.
Hello, and welcome back to Shockwaves. We are going to try something a little bit different tonight. So for the past 6 years, is it now?
Five and a half.
We have been doing this thing in Los Angeles, which all of our listeners have heard about throughout the years, called Dead Right Horror Trivia Night. And this was started by Ryan Turek and I, literally, what was it, like 5.5 years ago at Jump Cut? How did this come about, Kane?
I don't remember why you guys brought it to me. I just remember going, oh, good, look at all these people. Sweet.
I remember where the inkling of the idea came from, because I had just moved from from New York like 6 months prior. And when I was in New York, I did a pub trivia night every month at the Slipper Room on New York's Lower East Side. And it was very much like what we see with Dead Right now, where you always have the same team, and we had team T-shirts, and it was just, you know, we were very pride, and we were the Foucault Love Dolls, and it was just general pub trivia, but we had a blast doing it. And when I moved to Los Angeles, I really missed it. And at some point, I said to Elric, like, we should do like a horror pub trivia night at Jump Cut. And then you said, okay.
Yeah.
And that was
That's how great things are born.
And then I was looking for a co-host, and I remember I called Ryan and was like, hey, let's do this horror pub trivia night. And the first one was amazing, because Ryan and I, we decided to do it, and I remember we sent out like invites over email and Facebook.
Well, and also, and he was shocked till you drop Ryan there. So there was a lot of, you guys were, and what were you?
I was Fangoria.
So you guys had a lot of pull on the press.
Yeah, like we promoted the hell out of it. And I remember we invited Fearnet and a whole bunch of the other horror outfits. And I remember Ryan and I showing up like an hour in advance, and we were really worried that nobody was going to show up, because we were like, how many people would come to like a horror-themed pub trivia night? And that first night at Jump Cut, we had like a line around the block. Mm. We were worried that the cops were going to show up. We kept talking about the fire department was going to shut us down. Jared, you were there on the first night, right?
I was, yep. As was Brian Collins. Mm-hmm. Yep.
There's no rules at Jump Cut.
Yep.
Yeah.
All violations were forgotten about.
It's always funny when the, like on Facebook, on this day thing, because I always forget that the first one, you actually kept the tables in.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good, because that's thought it was going to be small.
Yeah.
Yeah. We thought nobody
and
was going to show
that
up.
That went the way the dodo.
And this like, is also when I started to like Ryan, because before that, I didn't really know Ryan that well, but always just assumed, you know, he'd be a prick.
Yeah.
but then he came, I remember really well, he would always come and really help set up, and he would like flip all the tables, and yeah, like he's such a big dude, he would just like grab a table over his arm.
Oh, yeah.
And I was always like super impressed, because he never didn't do that, like ever, from the whole start to the end. I was like, oh, there's a good guy.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right.
And so Ryan and I started doing this 5.5 years ago. And we developed, I'll call them regulars. And these are people who come every single month. They have their own teams. And so tonight we're going to play a couple rounds of horror trivia on air. And I have brought in my current co-host of Dead Right Horror Trivia, Jared Rivet.
Hello.
Current implies you're getting rid of him soon.
No. I'm just Ryan. Ryan I can't even say retired. Ryan stopped doing the monthly hosting post Jump Cut when he started working so much for Blumhouse, and
right,
his schedule got more sporadic, but he still comes in occasionally.
Right.
So I needed somebody a bit more steady.
Full-time. Yeah.
Full-time.
Well, let's give Jared some props that he's probably one of the most lethal trivia players. he was probably the most winningest. I mean, Brian was on the
there
same
is team. No yes. way to yeah. – to defeat Jared, and I'm happy about this because he was on my team. And so there was no logical choice other than to make him host at this point.
Yep, it's true.
And it changed the pirate paradigm, really.
Yes, yeah. Well, because here's what happened. Because you're so impossible to stump that anytime any of us guested the questions would be impossible.
Right.
And everyone in the room except for you would be angry.
No, it's true.
Because they're like, oh, man, I don't know any of this stuff. So.
But you know, and it was the thing about Zombie Redneck, and I always say this, and we've always said this. It was that, yeah, our team name was Zombie Redneck Torture Family. And I guess the core group was me, you, Rob G, Brian Collins.
Also in the room.
Who is here.
Also in the room. Hi. Mike Williamson, Gatto Setien.
And Keller.
And Sean Keller.
And Sean Keller. And the thing that was kind of, I mean, I was good, great, but.
Savant.
Team-wise, we all had kind of our.
Specialties.
Our specialties, our expertise. And one of the things that I think was really strong about me and Brian was that I can kind of, the stuff pops into my head almost as like a picture. And I don't necessarily know the answer, but I can feed keywords to Brian Collins or to Rob. Rob did it too. I'd be able to do it to Rob. And he would be like, oh, okay, that's Daphne Zuniga.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't know that that's who that was, but oh, it's the invitation and it's Daphne Zuniga. Like, well, no one else would have. So we had this good kind of thing, and that was kind of where it worked. So I remember one time. You
were drawing the pictures for the longest time. We're like, that's you know, I mean, so, a great Daphne Zuniga, but it's not.
So I guess that was the first 2 years, 3 years. Mm-hmm. So when did that? So the Jump Cut closed in 16?
It was open for 3 years.
Yeah, we did it there. And this is monthly. Early. We have never missed a month.
Yeah.
And then we also have with us Paula Haefeli, who's been with us. You were there from kind of the get-go as well on Susan Lucio Fulci.
Yeah. Second or third time, I think. We couldn't get in the first night.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, it was packed. So, and then we started a wait list, I remember. We had a wait list to get in, and then we were able to start letting more people in each month. And now, when Jared and I do it monthly, we average about, I'd say, 120 to 150 people.
Yeah.
And sometimes more. Like, there was once a couple of months ago that we had close to 200 in the building, and we were like, this is nuts, and it takes forever to grade.
And, and your new location is Blast from the Past.
Blast from the Past, Burbank.
Yeah, the one you've been doing.
And the fact that we still do this monthly and have 150 people show up to let us ask them, you know, horror trivia questions each month is amazing.
Well, part of it also, you have amazing prizing often, like almost always. Like,
yeah, Elric still participates.
Yeah, I've still been playing. I mean, I'm on with the one of the teams that kind of ends up doing pretty well lately because of, Dave Parker is another one of the kind of all-star trivia players, I'd say.
The only man that I fear is what I always
And I think Dick Grunert was one who had never missed one, right?
Grunert and I are the only two people that have never missed a game.
So Dick, we've already talked about a bit on the show. So, and I'm unfortunately for me tonight, the part I'm always good at is the pictorial rounds, and I have a feeling that that's not going to help me today.
That's not going to help you tonight,
Kate. So I could be
not good radio.
Paula, what's your specialty? Like, what are you really good at on your team? Because you guys are always, you're like third place. You're always third place.
Yeah, our catchphrase is we're number two.
We're number two. That's what they chant. We are number two.
Yes.
We're number two.
So you're liars. Because you're
We were number two for a while. We got this close to hosting, and then we lost to you guys, I think.
That's right.
I'm still mad about it, Kane.
Yeah.
I'm good at random stuff, like Buffy and Supernatural I'm really good at, and just like random VHS covers I'm pretty good at. And I do the same thing that you do, Jared, because I'm on a team with my boyfriend, so I'll be like, oh, I know who this is. It's the guy who was in that movie we watched last Friday. And then he'll give me two names. I'll be like, yeah, that's him.
Right.
That's
right.
Awesome. Right. And Collins, you are now on the blood-splattered bridesmaid. Yes.
Spattered.
Blood-spattered.
Spattered.
I always say it wrong.
It was half Zombie Redneck, so it was me and Garo and Sean. We stayed on, and we brought in...
After I left.
Yeah.
After I abandoned you.
After you abandoned us. We brought in Elise Wax, and Amy Searles, and Kaylin Corrigan. We did all right. I think we only won once or twice.
Yeah. Well, you initially were called the New Batch.
The New Batch.
New Batch.
But you guys always.
I
love you guys because you always. You may not win rounds, but you always have super high points.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So we were always coming into like the lightning round, and then we'd lose it. No matter what team we were against, we'd always like lose the lightning round by like a point or two, and that's why we switched the name. That's now I'm thinking of it to the Bridesmaids.
That was
the whole like. Always a bridesmaid, never a bride.
Initially, it was, because the New Batch was because you were the sequel.
Yes.
And everything with Mike Williamson, everything is about Joe Dante.
Yeah.
And so it was, okay, they're calling themselves the New Batch. And then they played as the New Batch for I don't know how many months and you weren't winning.
Yeah.
And so finally, you were bridesmaids that were never brides, so the blood spattered bridesmaids.
Yeah.
Nice. So the way
and
that.
Sean just left us. So,
did he have a reason for retirement, or he just?
I think he's just kind of like he wants to play every now and then. He doesn't want to make it like a commitment,
a monthly.
Know? So we have Jackie Greed joining us.
Nice. Oh. His
post, so. Who's great. Yeah. She's awesome.
And she loves trivia. She went from not knowing about it to it's her favorite.
She gave me a great idea for a round that we used, which was the chapter lists.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that one
was hard. That was awesome. And she just kind of pulled me aside and she's like, I have this idea. I don't know how to, I'll give it to you and you figure it out. I don't know how to make it work. And it was hard to put together.
And it was, hard, Jared would name chapters, DVD chapters from movies, and you would have to guess the movie from the chapter title.
Brutal.
And it was it was 1 through 8.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And so it was really hard to not pick a chapter one that was called main titles.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You had to find something that had like something at the beginning. I think I ended up doing The Exorcist. I think it was
Iraq
with and it was okay. Well, that's a good. But you had to make sure that they were discernible, that they were something that you could tell what it was, and that as you went along, I kept reminding everybody, like, okay, this is chapter 3 now. So, now some DVDs and Blu-rays, the chapters are really spread out, and you only, like Scream Factory, sometimes only do, 8.
Yeah.
And then sometimes, if it's a real, Criterion or whatever, they'll have, 30.
Every single scene.
Yeah.
Have, 50 chapters.
So it's kind of, it was unfair in that way, but it was, I made sure that it was chapters 1 through 8 for the 8 questions, which is normally what we do for a round. That's not what we're doing
tonight. 8 questions. Yeah, we're mixing it up tonight.
Normally eight questions in 8 rounds. But she gave me that idea for the chapter list thing, and I was thrilled, but then it was just, I bit off more than I could chew, and it was a bitch to put together.
It was still easier than your music rounds, Jared.
We're doing a music round tonight, guys.
Yes.
But throughout the years, we've had a lot of celebrity hosts, like we've had Stuart Gordon come in and co-host. Mick Garris has done rounds.
Tom McLaughlin came in last month.
We just had last
Jeff
month.
Jeff Lieberman, I believe.
Yeah, Jeff Lieberman did a round.
Adam Rifkin came in.
So it's definitely, it's a thing in the horror community.
Do you feel, because Jared's, because of your psychic connection, do you feel you have any advantage now?
He's talking to Brian.
He's talking to Brian.
No, I've long been convinced that Jared has made sure to ask stuff that he knows that I won't know. Make sure that I don't look good without him.
If I had to put as much work into putting the rounds together and coming up with questions and making them work and bulletproofing them as I did making sure that Brian didn't know them.
Yeah.
It's too much of a challenge. It's like, okay.
Then he'll text me at 2 a.m. and he'll be like, have you ever seen Psycho 3? And I'll be like, oh, like once. And then like, oh, there's a Psycho 3 round.
And the thing is like Brian's my kind of like, we will text each other about any old horror movie thing if we're in the midst of, if we've thrown something on and I'm like, hey, Radish from Final Exam is in Terror in the Isles. Oh, no shit. And we'll just start talking about it. And so there are times when I realize that I can't do that because I'll give something away. Yeah. So
we don't
talk
as much now that you host.
It's true.
There was – for a while, I know that the Dream Warriors, which is Chelsea Peters' team, had this theory that whatever I talk about on Shockwaves that week will be I will ask questions about.
That was true for a little while. But
I had to stop doing it because somebody told me about it. And then I was like, they've discovered that I watch something and then I'll write a trivia question about it that month because I just watched it.
When you were on Killer POV, it was – almost every month.
Oh, which sucked because everyone would look at me and I'd go, I didn't listen. And I'd always get it wrong and be like, fuck.
No, and Brian and I would assign each other kind of things to listen to and watch.
You would make assignments based on what I talked about?
Yep. Yeah, we would do that too.
Oh my gosh, I am going to talk about the worst movies from now on
ran off,
just to see if everybody comes back and is like, oh, you watched that? Fun. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
So what we're going to do tonight is we are going to play 4 rounds, and we're going to mix it up. So the way that it works on the normal pub trivia nights is we do it pub trivia style, where we will ask questions, everybody writes them down, they turn in their answer sheet, and then we grade it. We thought that might be a little dry for air, so we are going to do this Final Jeopardy style, where we're going to ask one question. You guys will have 5 seconds to write down
–
10, maybe 10. We'll see if I'm feeling nice. 5 to 10 to write down your answers, and then everyone holds up their sheets at once. And we will score accordingly.
He's slow and I'm in pain. We're screwed.
Well, each question is going to be worth 1 point.
Yes.
And then at the end, there are no prizes tonight. Usually we give you guys like
– What?
I know. You get the glory of winning Dead Right Horror Trivia.
Guys got Blu-rays anyway.
At least Jared has.
So there you go.
I'm going home with a bunch of cool stuff.
The winner gets to go watch Halloween. All right.
Well, we all just watched that before he came here.
Oh, and P.S. Ryan, wherever you are, you're a coward.
Yeah, Ryan's a coward.
Yeah, Turek was supposed to play it.
I'm legit sad because I hoped when Ryan quit, you know, I was hoping that any night that he had available, he might come and just join a team just for fun.
Which
and
I
could
done.
Go up against.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you have.
Yeah. We both have. Yeah.
So I was hoping that I could go up against Ryan at regular trivia. And then I was like, oh, this, you know, you guys told us about this. I'm like, finally, I get to go head to head with Ryan. Yeah. And that coward chickened out.
Yep. He has
you guys
never...
should do that when his dad's back in town and see who wins at Ryan's dad round.
Yeah,
his
dad even did a round. Ryan's dad.
Yes.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yep.
His
dad
questions
did
a round.
That was a good round.
Mr. Drake does not mess around.
No, yeah. But Ryan no. has never played.
Nope.
I played. I was on
Ever?
Colin's team.
Ever.
Wow. I rocked the Buffy round that night, and then everything else I was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Mixed it up. So, yeah.
And then when you and I played when the Boggy Creek was hosting,
yes.
My team won.
Yes, they did. That's yes, because did. You're Jared.
Yeah, well.
And that's why I pulled you to host.
Could you guys explain that if a team wins, if they win three times in a row, that's why we're talking
oh,
about
yeah, right, right,
that.
Oh, right, right,
the zombie redneck torture family rule.
Yes. Yeah.
Because Jared's team, the team that Jared, Rob, and Brian used to have, kept winning to the point that people got pissed about it,
yep.
Which was fun because it gave us a heel to boo. Yeah, so every single time they'd win a round, everybody would be like, oh, fuck you guys.
That's right.
But we made the rule after a while that on the third month of winning in a row, they have to host so that another team can win.
Right.
Breaking it up.
I think
up
we've done it like three times.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys
and we
have done
almost
that.
Did this last time. But yeah. It's also kind of a relief when you don't have to. You know?
Yeah. Hosting's a lot
Hosting's
of work.
A lot of
yeah,
work.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. Like Jared and I put in a lot of time on this, yeah. And it's just a passion. Like we just love doing
yeah,
it.
Yeah, Boggy Creek is kind of the new zombie redneck. I'm sorry.
We've noticed the last couple that there's a couple of other good teams that we didn't know who they are.
Susan Chu, Fulci, Tokyo Gorge.
Some strangers who we'd never seen just suddenly won one, you know, one time. So.
Yeah. Well, what was the
Poultry
I can't remember
guys.
Who they were.
Skinsuit Riot.
Skinsuit Riot. Yeah.
They're like the stealth. I don't even know who they are.
Yeah, they're really good.
I dig that.
They just came.
Yeah. You want more of that.
Yeah.
You want more of that.
Okay, guys. So we're going to do four rounds. Right. The first round has five questions in it. So
five.
You're going to write down your answer, just each question. So the first one is, in The Shining, what type of ice cream does Danny request?
My pen doesn't work. Is that coming?
No.
Uh-oh.
And?
Hold on. Does it really not work?
No, I got it.
You got it.
It's kind of there.
Okay. And hold your sheets up.
Oh, man. I wrote 1 through 5 thinking that all...
I got it wrong.
Sorry.
I got it
wrong. Elric wrote strawberry. That is very wrong.
Yes.
Okay. Paula got it. That is some chocolate.
Chocolates.
Brian got it.
That seems
that
too easy.
Is chocolate.
Oh, man. I
and Rob, what did you write?
He wrote chocolate.
Okay.
I'll write bigger now that I know.
I actually almost wrote coffee because my brain went to Jaws.
We have had that argument repeatedly at Horror Trivia because we've asked that question twice now.
So we need to talk about this a little bit because evidently Buzz Wallach, who is going to be coming and doing a bonus round this month, he evidently reached out to someone.
Oh, my God.
He won't say who, but I have a pretty good idea who it is. Who actually nailed down definitively whether or not Mike Brody, young little 10-year-old, 9-year-old Mike Brody in Jaws, whether or not in the hospital scene he is asking for coffee, the drink, or coffee ice cream.
Now, Jared and I have long said that it is coffee ice cream because coffee ice cream, it's a flavor and it's popular in New England.
It was popular in New England in the 70s.
Who wants ice cream? And the response is coffee.
Yes.
And so we say, okay, well, he wants coffee ice cream.
He's also 9.
Yes, he's 9.
Buzz's argument against this is that he is in a position to ask for pretty much whatever he wants, and so he wants something grown up. He wants coffee.
Yeah. Now, has he divulged the bonus round?
He has not.
He has not. We do not know yet.
No,
but he hasn't divulged. I mean, I know what the bonus round is going to be, but he hasn't divulged who he reached out to and what the answer was. He refuses to. He's going to give that away at the head of the round.
Interesting.
That's
interesting.
The whole reason for the round. So
interesting.
That might be your clue. But it's a bonus round. It's not going to count.
Is there a bonus round about ice cream?
It's a bonus round about ice cream. I already
win
did.
That, actually.
So this all came up because I did a round about ice cream.
Yeah, we did about ice cream.
Oh, really?
The whole round was about ice cream horror. No, I've reached a point with thematic stuff that's like on
that's
another
good,
level.
Actually.
Okay,
right,
question two.
Wait, this is my question.
Yeah.
Okay, question number two. Towards the beginning of 1978's Piranha, Maggie, the female lead, is seen playing an arcade video game at the airport. What game is she playing? Towards the beginning of 1978's Piranha, Maggie, the female lead, is seen playing an arcade video game at the airport. What game is she playing?
Papers up. Okay, Paula, what you got? Centipede incorrect. Is not the correct answer. Brian wrote Jaws, which is, it is the Jaws stand-up console game. What you write?
Nice. I wrote Centipede.
Centipede.
But I guessed.
And Elric, what'd you write?
Tetris.
Tetris was not even invented at the time.
The correct answer was Jaws. Yeah. Oh, it is the first of many in-jokes in Piranha 2, in Piranha.
Yeah.
There you go.
Question
three. I should have stayed in bed. I knew this was a mistake.
In 1960, how much money does Marion Crane steal in Psycho? How much money does Marion Crane steal in Psycho?
Rob, would you bet?
and that's total. That's not total. Minus the amount that she uses to buy the car.
Yeah.
Okay.
How much does she steal from?
Yeah, total. Like how much the guy's like, this is his down payment or he's buying his daughter a house. Yeah. How much is that money?
Right.
Okay.
Here's the thing. Even when somebody at a trivia thing is known for a franchise, like I am for this one.
It's always when you get a...
Because it's happening on...
Andrew
I don't
Cash
know what it
fucked
was.
Up Nightmare on Elm Street. Yep. I remember.
Andrew Cash fucked that up. Yep. I think I might have fucked up a Psycho question once.
Buzz didn't get the
Junkanoo. Jaws Revenge.
Jaws Revenge. Yeah. Yeah. And I think we brought it up on last time I was on Shockwaves, Victor Halperin.
Oh, yeah.
I wrote with Toby Hooper.
That's right.
I spent 2 years working with Toby Hooper on a remake of White Zombie. And we got a White Zombie question in the first game. Yeah. And it was from Ryan, because Ryan likes his classic stuff, and I had a kind of a Ryan-themed question coming up. It was who directed White Zombie. And I didn't know the answer.
Son of a gun.
It just was gone. And it was on the cover page of my script. Like, I knew Victor Halperin. Yeah. It was him and his brother, who's... It's something
it's
Halperin.
Too late. You can't do it.
No,
yeah.
No.
There's no makeup.
So, no, but it always is. It's always the person that knows it.
Okay, guys. Paper's up. How much money did Marion Crane steal? Brian Collins got it. $40,000.
Rob G got it.
Half price. Kane and Paula did not get points 20 on that one.
Do you want to know how I remember this number? It's really stupid, actually.
Because it's insane that you could buy a house for that.
a car. Because they only add one zero in the remake. And so the 98 one, I think it's 400,000. I'm pretty sure.
You could buy a house.
I remember that's one thing that changed.
Yeah. In 98. Yeah.
I was like, really?
I was just guessing at the number. I couldn't remember.
And I was like, is that really for life?
Yeah. Okay, question four.
Four. Let's see. God, we're really at number four already?
Yeah.
Okay. This has a little bit of... One of the things I like to do is make them a little educational. And so this has got a little bit of the Jared... It's long-winded and bloated, which is the other way.
It's a total Jared question.
All right. It is commonly accepted that Steven Spielberg's big breakout project was the 1971 TV movie Duel. But... Within months of the first airing of Duel, another Spielberg-directed horror TV movie aired in January 1972, which didn't make much of an impact at all, a virtually forgotten demonic possession drama starring Darren McGavin and Sandy Dennis. What was it called?
So right now, everyone's staring up at the ceiling, except for Rob, who's feverishly
writing.
Rob
is writing something.
I have half the title. That's why I'm so angry.
What was the title
and this
of...
This wasn't on Amazing Stories.
This is 1972.
1972.
For two reasons.
One of the rep theaters around here.
I've seen them. They projected it on film once as a private screening at the Cinefamily.
Wow.
So I saw it that way once, and also they just mentioned it on the latest Inside Jaws, which I listened to this morning.
Very cool.
And that's why I'm like,
I didn't know that.
Oh, God.
I didn't know that.
Okay, guys, let's see the papers. Brian Collins has nothing.
Yep. Mine's wrong, but I wrote something down that's wrong.
Don't look in the basement.
The basement is incorrect.
Is not the right answer.
I just know it has an old woman in it, and she's a famous old actress. I can't
you get
remember.
No points
you
for that,
you might be thinking
sir.
Of something else.
Oh, yeah. Really?
It's Summer Something.
Nope.
You're
thinking Summer of Fear, I'm thinking,
that's
which
Wes
is Wes Craven.
Yeah.
But you also, but in terms of the title is Something Evil.
Something Evil.
So Summer Something.
Summer Something.
Similar. That's
not about, it's not about an old woman?
No,
you might be thinking of Burnt Offerings.
Yes.
He did Spielberg did. It might have been an Amazing Story.
Oh, okay.
I just know he did something.
And it's a really cool movie.
Yeah.
I've seen it, but I don't remember it. And it's also, somebody pointed out that of all the stuff of his that is out on DVD and Blu-ray, it is the one it is not out. And so he clearly, because you know how he has this kind of power to like make things happen and not happen,
yes.
Very kind of notoriously, there seems to be kind of a, he doesn't want that out.
but BFG, no problem.
Yeah, exactly.
That should be out in the world.
Yeah, 1941, no problem.
Okay, guys, question five. What state does the 2006 remake of The Hills Have Eyes supposedly take place in? What state does the 2006 remake of The Hills Have Eyes supposedly take place in? The bulk of the movie. They're traveling. The mutants. Where are the mutants at? Okay, guys. Sheets up. And Brian Collins has written down Nevada, and he is correct. Paula also got Nevada.
I did say that's him. New Mexico.
New Mexico is where the original is.
No. I almost put New Mexico. I wasn't sure.
Did you switch that? Did you switch that?
Uh-oh. Oh, my goodness.
This
no, I am sorry.
Also...
It is not. This is so trivia.
Wow.
It is in New Mexico.
You know how I knew that? Because Alexander Aja was on Mick Garris' show talking about how Morocco looked like New Mexico.
Yes.
And so I kept thinking, New Mexico.
Thank you, Rob.
So I guess
New Mexico.
And Elric are correct.
You and Elric got the point on that one. Thank you.
I'm leaving after that one.
Nevada. I can't remember which one was which.
Yeah, the original's Nevada. The remake was New Mexico.
Right.
Thank you.
Right.
And by the way, when that happens at trivia to a group full of people,
everyone
starts screaming and going.
And then sometimes there's always disagreements where Jared and I, we will say, okay, well, according to IMDb, the movie came out in 1972.
Oh, my God.
So, and then somebody will find, well, according to this website or this Blu-ray bonus feature with the director, it was 1971 in Topeka, so it's 71.
I think the most controversial was one about inflation. And I remember the numbers, and everyone was getting lost in their brain.
Yeah.
The
box,
Unless it's like something like what opened at number one.
So we don't ask box office questions anymore because they get so convoluted. Yeah. Because if you look on IMDb versus Wikipedia versus box office mojo, you'll get three different answers. So we don't even ask box office questions anymore because it always ends in tragedy.
No, but we, but Brian and I have a running one that we do not let go of, which is Maniac, the original Maniac, which in every single reference that you can find online, including the Blue Underground Blu-ray, which was made by the director, says 1980.
I've always thought it was 80.
Well, that's what everything says. If you look it up on IMDb, if you look it up on Wikipedia, if you look it up anywhere, it says 1980. However, Brian Collins, who was born in 1980, knows, and he's correct, by the way, that it was released in January of 1981. And it's this weird kind of...
It was released in 1980, because IMDb, they go by whatever the movie had its first public...
Not test screening, but festival or whatever screening. And it but was it's not released necessarily a wide
Italy.
Distro.
In New York, or was it New York?
Yeah.
For like 1 week in like December 27th, 1980 or whatever.
But then wider.
Which has gotten us into problems before.
So you would
have
to accept both answers, though, wouldn't you?
I didn't in that case.
Jared will
usually,
not.
We'll usually set a firm line, but people will only argue if they think they're going to get the answer right,
course,
if it helps their score. So, like, I've done questions where I'm like, 2010 horror films, and then somebody will be like, but it only opened, you know, at a festival in 2010. It didn't do its widespread till 2011, in which case we say, well, no, you're only arguing that because you got it wrong.
Yeah. I think in this case, what the question was in that was, it was about Tom Savini's... It was at the peak of Tom Savini was like in demand and going from one job to another job to another job. And I think the question was, in 1981, he had three movies that he did the makeup effects for. And I left Maniac off, and it caused this huge uproar. And the only uproar was from two or three teams that were arguing that it was 1981. And my thing was like, well, Brian wasn't even... A lot, like he was just born, so he wasn't paying attention. I guess, but it was weird because
I was an inquisitive kid.
What are the other three?
Let's see. No. 81. So the Burning,
Eyes of a Stranger,
and the Prowler.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
We have like a safe word on our team, heartbeeps, where we lost this question, and our co-teammate William Bibbiotti of Canceled Too Soon thought it was Heartbeeps, and it was what did Rick Baker lose out on the Oscar? I think for American Werewolf in London was a movie he lost to. And he was like, Heartbeeps. And we're all like, no, it was whatever we said. And he didn't fight for it. Mm-hmm. And they kept the rest of the day, he kept going, heartbeats, you guys, heartbeats.
Oh, yeah.
We
still do that. Yeah. Even though I'm not on a team anymore, we still do that to each other.
So when we're like, I'm fighting for this answer, I am right, we always just look at each other and go, heartbeats.
Heartbeaps, man. Yeah.
That's a bad movie.
Okay. All right. So next round.
Yeah, I think what you're going to want to do is write down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yes. Six for this one.
Yeah.
So we do this at the actual game. This is a type of round that we do at the actual game. And I love these, and people hate them.
Are they limericks?
Oh, shit.
Not limericks.
No.
Those are limericks.
Those are kind of like, I think they're creative.
I decided to do. I like writing limericks. So
I decided to do the variation on the. We've done this exact subject before this way because it was kind of the easiest thing. And there was also kind of a mandate that we wanted to make this a little bit more of kind of a sampling of what we kind of do. So this is going to be a quick medley. It lasts about 11 seconds of basically about a second and a half or 2 second snippets from John Carpenter scores in rapid succession.
Oh, okay. All right.
And what I want you to do is there are six of them.
You can't see this, but Rob is cracking his knuckles and rolling up his sleeves in anticipation.
And so we're going to, what you need to do to get that. Now, we will give you 1 point for each correct one.
Yeah, there's a potential 6 points here, guys.
Yeah, so we're only going to do it once because Elric loves it when we only do this once. But we will play it.
I'm going to suffer for that.
We will play it through once.
Before you start.
We usually play it twice at the event.
Just so our audience at home knows what kind of bastard Jared is. He'll play a clip and everyone will be like, oh, that's The Fly. And he's like, The Fly 2.
Yes,
Predator.
Yes.
It's like, nope, it's Predator 2.
Exactly.
Like,
exactly. Well, so yeah, last month we did one that was franchises and I specifically said, okay, look, it's even if it's from Predator 2, if you put Predator, that's fine. I just want it to be the franchise. So yeah,
Escape from
up.
LA, I'm ready.
Yeah, you don't get to see as much because you don't play as much, but I have lightened up on a great many things.
All right, good.
Yes.
Okay, guys, so we're going to play this through once. And see how you guys do. I may take pity and play twice.
No, twice.
You usually do it once and then you do it again, don't you?
We do it
twice. We do it twice.
Traditionally
at the
do
event.
It twice. Mm-hmm. Elric, and the first time I did it, I played it three times. And the third time I did it, it was John Carpenter. And the third time I did it, it was just people double checking. They were just double checking their work.
But it wasn't because I'm good at this, it's because I've got people on my team who are really good at this and I want to get the
points. We have a full team, we have other people writing. We only have one person writing.
I vote for twice, but let's see how it goes.
That's why I only did six instead of eight. Otherwise it would be eight.
All right,
so I'm gonna hit play in 3, 2, 1.
Jesus.
That's it.
I vote for one more time.
Yeah, I couldn't.
Because I see most people only have like two things written down.
I also didn't understand the assignment until you did. Quick succession just finally dawned on me.
It's like the old radio shows
radio
they used to do this where
contests.
They would they'd meld like seven songs together and play it once and then you'd have to call in and list all seven to win, you know, the Steppenwolf tickets.
Yes.
Okay.
So yeah.
Steppenwolf tickets.
Super Tramp. I don't know.
I'm definitely voting
giving
for
away
Freedom.
Super Tramp tickets.
All right, so we want a second second play.
Yeah. No.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean all mine will still be wrong, but I still want to hear it again.
Okay, so these are John Carpenter scores, not necessarily John Carpenter movies, and they are 1 through 6, and you've already heard them once. Here is the second and final time we'll be playing them for your benefit.
Okay.
All right.
We are going to read them out.
Give
I'm going to have
a second.
Yeah, we'll give you guys a second. I'm going to have Jared read the correct answers out, and you guys get to self-score and tell us how many you got correct. You can hold up your sheets so we can make sure.
I got zero correct, guys.
I can also play. I will play the snippet when I identify what it is.
Yes.
Individually and divorced from the medley.
I'm trying to guess if I should even guess.
Rob,
always
all of
guess.
Mine are guesses.
Guess.
You got to do it.
Always
anyway.
Guess.
Sometimes
yeah.
you're right.
It's like the SATs.
Why not?
Better to guess than to put nothing.
Or you can write Jared, you suck for each of them. I do that sometimes.
No, no, no.
A lot of people do that.
No, no, no. They don't write Jared, you suck. They write Jared's mom.
Yeah. They do.
Really?
We get a lot of Jared's
and
mom
someday
jokes.
Someday the answer will be Jared's mom.
I'm going to make that work someday.
Yes.
I'm going to make that work someday.
We do get
In fact,
a
I just thought of a way to do it.
Of Jared mom jokes.
Just now. But
Who is the mother of the writer of Jackals?
Of Jackals.
I'm not even guessing. I just want my rival.
Okay. Hey, your correct answer, guys.
All right. Number one, that is the March of the Children from Village of the Damned. Who got it?
Me.
Brian.
Only Collins.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I love that one. I begged him on Twitter to play it at the
That's
the
right, because he put up that thing.
He did not.
No, but he put up that thing saying the most, make a request and the most requests for that one thing I will play.
Yeah. Oh,
I don't
cool.
know that he lived up to it.
I'm not sure. I mean,
Village of the Damned was
what if
bad.
Everybody voted Halloween or whatever he was going to play
right.
anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know what? That Village of the Damned theme is really
it's
good.
Really good.
He played it at the Palladium, I thought.
Really?
Oh, he did do it?
Well, because when Anthology came out, which is the best
right,
of.
Yeah. Right, right, right.
I didn't see it the second time. So
yeah, it came with a bonus 7-inch that had Body Bags on one side and Village of the Damned on the second. I'm pretty sure he played both the songs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so when he came back around.
Here is number two. Probably the easiest.
Assault on Precinct 13.
Mm-hmm. Assault on Precinct 13. So who got it?
I got that.
I got it.
Yeah. Nice.
Paula's
I'm
just
still
staring
zero
blankly
zero.
Ahead. Okay. Here's number three.
I have a sick love for this movie.
Ghosts of Mars.
Oh,
man.
I do not have a sick love for this movie.
I didn't have that one, but I do have that score. Yeah.
It's a good score.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of the movie, but it's a good score.
I want him to go on tour with Anthrax and do remember when like Nine Inch Nails and Bowie went on tour
and then they
ended up playing together?
I saw that show and it blew my fucking brain.
How great would it be if John Carpenter played and then Anthrax slowly started coming on stage and they did fucking Ghosts of Mars songs?
And
Pam Grier's head.
And no Anthrax songs. Right?
Yeah, no Anthrax, yeah.
Number four. Guesses?
I don't know the name, but is this from one of the Lost Themes albums? Because you had said movie or music or score. No. Okay.
Nope. It is from Escape from New York. It is the glider sequence. It's the Engulf Cathedral Debussy cover that he does during the sequence where Snake goes flying in with the glider.
See, I think this is going to be easy.
It's tough.
And then Jared shows up.
Yeah.
Number five, Cinco.
Big Trouble, baby.
Big Trouble, Little China.
I'm terrible.
Pork Chop Express. Who got it?
Me.
Just the G.
Go G.
Wow, this is lower than I would have thought. Yeah.
All right, and then number six, final one.
Prince of Darkness.
I took a wild guess. I actually said Halloween 3.
It is Halloween 3.
Right.
Oh, that's what your clue was talking about.
Okay, so Paula, how many points?
I got zero.
Brian.
I got three.
You got three.
I got three.
I got one.
Oops, sorry.
Rob got three, and Kane got one.
Just assault. Man, that's sad.
Okay, guys, moving on to round three. Halfway
round.
Done. So this is five questions again, so you're just going to be writing down your answers. So question one. In Dead Alive, what is the full name of the creature that starts the zombie-like outbreak?
I should have flagged you on zombie-like. They are,
zombie?
They are literally zombies.
Are they? I mean, it's
Dead Alive is a zombie movie.
You mean Brain Dead?
Brain Dead. I'm surprised Kane didn't, jump in with that.
Wait, Dead Alive or Brain Dead?
Dead Alive.
Okay. Dead Alive.
Okay. A.K.A. Brain Dead.
Oh.
Brain Dead
I'm thinking Brain Dead like the Bill Pullman.
Yeah.
Brain Dead every other territory in the world,
U.S. Yeah, okay. But U.S. it's Dead Alive. That starts the zombie.
Dead slash Alive.
Not that I know it anyway. I guessed.
Okay, pencils up. What is it?
Sheets up.
Sheets up. No. Sumatran rat monkey. Yes.
It is right. Huh.
Yes.
I can remember the other one.
We want Sumatran.
The rest of us just got rat monkey.
I just
rat
monkey.
Yeah, I just rat monkey.
Oh, so Collins gets points for Sumatran rat monkey.
I know my nationalities.
Okay, question two.
Question number two.
I'm sorry, New Zealand.
Yeah, New Zealand.
I know.
Don't let Kane back in.
I even played pool with the guy who catches the monkey at the start. He's like,
really?
A Wellington Zoo official, and this monkey's going to Newtown. I remember that guy was a great guy.
He's Bill got Ralston. The bite.
Did you just name drop somehow?
He's in the opening scene.
And I will say that when we play, sometimes we let something like rat monkey slide.
Like today?
But not
today.
Nah.
If no one had gotten it, maybe.
Well, we'll let.
Well, I mean, look at the prize that's at stake.
Right. You know?
Respect.
Yeah. Respect.
The respect number, of the listeners.
The glory.
Number two, how many times did Bela Lugosi play Igor in the Universal Frankenstein movies? Looking for a number.
Shoot.
How many times did Bela Lugosi play Igor in the Universal Frankenstein movies?
Okay, what do we got? Collins.
Two.
Two.
Three.
So we got
zero. And zero. The correct answer is two.
Two. Oh. So Collins and Paula got the point.
I have 2 points, you guys. I'm so excited.
Question the third. In total, how many films are there in the Return of the Living Dead franchise? I just need a number. How many films in the Return of the Living Dead franchise? Okay. Sheets up. Collins got it correct. There are five. Rob got it right.
I was hopeful for six.
Six.
I thought it was six.
Because I like the two shot at the... where's
Rave
the shot?
Rave to the Grave.
Yeah, but they're shot...
Yeah, I thought Rave to the Grave was
Necropolis.
Six.
Necropolis.
Yeah.
Those movies, the rights to those
Chernobyl.
Movies were on
they were
eBay
shot at Chernobyl.
Once,
yeah.
Were on eBay for like $500 or something like some pitiful number to own the movie outright.
It's like to own the rights?
Yeah.
Same director as Eight-Legged Freaks from New Zealand.
Oh my gosh.
I'll claim him.
Wow.
You know that Toby was originally supposed to direct both of those. Toby was going to direct the first. Yeah. And there's a lot of Toby in Return of the Living Dead. We talked about this.
Yeah,
there's a lot of him in Return
of the Living
Dead. But he was supposed to direct both of those back to back. Really, really odd. Okay, number, what number are we on?
Four.
Four?
For the round, yeah.
God, this is going by way too fast. I'm having too much fun. In Paul Morrissey's Blood for Dracula, 1974, also known as Andy Warhol's Dracula, despite the fact that Udo Kier's Dracula is feeding on a steady stream of victims throughout the film, why is he getting progressively sicker and weaker? Despite the fact that Udo Kier's Dracula is feeding on a steady stream of victims throughout the film, why is he getting progressively sicker and weaker?
Okay. Answer's up. Kane.
Whore's blood. The blood of these whores is killing him.
That's as good an answer.
Actually, right.
It's the famous
Brian wrote Jared's mom.
I remember because none of them are virgins.
That's correct.
None of them are virgins. So I just wrote STD.
Okay, so I will accept both Paula's and Kane's.
Yes, I've never even seen it. Yes.
The blood of these whores is killing me.
The Dracula, Udo Kier's Dracula in Paul Morrissey's Dracula can only drink the blood of virgins.
And it's like Barney the Vampire shit.
And it's kind of a softcore... It's kind of a softcore porn movie. Yeah. And so the running joke is that they're kind of staying temporarily in this farmhouse with the three lovely daughters who are all supposedly virgins. They're not. They're lying. And they want to marry their daughters off to the rich count who has come, who's also a really sickly kind of pale green Udo Kier. And so he drinks their blood. They're lying. And he spends 4 or 5 minutes of screen time after each one vomiting blood into the bathtub.
It's great.
And he says at one point,
The blood of these horses is killing me.
He's great in it. And the movie's really, really good. And the ending of that movie is something you will never forget if you have a chance to see it.
The director's a total dick now.
Yeah. Is he?
Yeah, he became this like crazy conservative and hates all his movies, hates Andy Warhol. He spent a day with us at film school like years ago. And I was just like, wow, who is that guy? Because his movies were so out there.
Right.
Yeah.
And sexually free and all the stuff with Joe D'Alessandro.
I've asked.
He changed dramatically, apparently.
This is not the question, but I know I've asked the prior question, what organ does Udo Kier say you have to fuck to taste life in flesh for Frankenstein, which is
the gallbladder
for some reason.
That's Udo, baby.
Yeah, Udo.
And then he played Dr. Frankenstein.
Yeah.
He's not as good in that.
No.
It's a bit of a stretch.
So sometimes we like to mix it up and we will ask non-film or television-related questions. Like Jared and I have done horror-related music questions. We've done literature questions. We've done Edgar Allan Poe's round before. And so this one is, we'll call it horror adjacent. According to the announcer and lore, how many ghosts currently live inside of Walt Disneyland's Haunted Mansion? At the very beginning, they announce how many ghosts live there. How many ghosts is it? Okay. How many, Paula?
99.
No. Brian, Brian also
Brian
wrote
had
down
99,
99
and immediately went to scratch it off. I'm guessing. I just said 12.
I'm undercutting him because this is like the Price is Right. I'm going with 8.
No, it is 999. There's room for one more.
But you don't see them at the end. You only see a handful of them.
Yeah, you don't see 900. That's
no, but they see it like literally as
over
first as you go in. He says,
well, some of us
don't
have family passes.
Come on that loop when you're going through the big
it's
crazy.
Paul
Freeze. Oh, they come
if you follow Beck on Instagram, you'll see she's there every weekend.
I go there every
this is a cheat.
It's not.
When you go through and it's like the full-on like cemetery, and there's that one loop where the ghosts are just shooting out into the sky. Uh-huh. You can't tell me that there are not.
There's like 999
ghosts
there.
In there.
Okay, so we are on to round 4, which is the art round.
Oh, God.
So we do this every couple of months. We'll do an art round where we ask folks to either kind of draw what this particular mask looked like from Halloween 4, or draw what this symbol looked like. Or
mine was the Cult of Thorns symbol from 6, though.
Yes. And every Halloween, we always do a pumpkin mask where we'll give them a theme and they have to design a pumpkin to that theme.
Yes.
So in this, for this one, and you will have, we'll give you guys, what, like 20 seconds, 15 seconds on this one?
Wow, that's quick.
Yeah, it is.
Draw Daphne's.
You have to draw because we are sitting in the Blumhouse office and I already scanned to make sure that this particular symbol is not in this room. Oh, I scanned as soon as I got here.
That's a good point.
As best you can, he's here. But his symbol is not. As best you can, draw the Bagul symbol from the Sinister franchise. You may begin. So, Jared.
So, Becca.
How do you think they're going to do on this?
I have absolutely no idea.
I think Collins will get it. Paula might, because Paula works in animation, like her day job.
Yeah, so but I can't draw it all. That's why I'm a producer.
You know what? This would be a good time for me to plug
Brian's. I
would like to plug. I just this week, I have gotten a new, I write audio dramas for a website called earbudtheater.com. I write, mine are always scary, but the show itself is kind of an anthology. It's almost like Twilight Zone, where there's horror ones and there's sci-fi ones and there's weird ones and funny ones. Mine are always scary. Mine is the latest. It dropped this week. It's called The Current. It is aquatic horror.
Aquatic horror.
Oh, and, which is Becca's favorite.
Hell yeah.
And I hope she listens to it. And Clark Wolf is in it. And some horror trivia people, Alyssa Wagner, Brianna Caitlin, Tracy Clifton, Mark Gottlieb. And I am very, very proud of it. And it's already breaking some site records. And I'm really, really happy
with it. Awesome.
And
Rob, remember that time Clark Wolf didn't bring number 6? throwback.
Killer POV. Killer POV, right. Throwback. Yeah. Okay.
But I got her to mention Earbud because I texted you.
That's right, you did, yeah.
Just before you started.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, let's see how your Bagul's. Now, there is a possible 5 points on this.
Holy shit.
So let's see how you guys did. Brian Collins.
Brian drew my mom.
We should take photos of this.
Yeah,
for
Brian,
later.
That kind of looks like a worm, an
it's
earthworm.
Like a Pac-Man ghost.
Yeah, Pac-Man ghost.
I don't think we can give any points to that, Brian.
It feels like the movie, so
no,
I'm giving
no,
it
no,
it
does not. It feels like nothing, Brian. You get no points
for
that.
No, but to your credit, Brian, it looks absolutely nothing like the symbol whatsoever.
Nothing like the symbol. Paula, let's see.
I don't remember it at all, so I just made something up that looks like a street sign.
Ooh. Okay.
No, it's like an arrow looking at
I like your effort. It's very speed racery. I don't think we can award points for that.
No.
Okay.
This one's mostly...
Okay, Elric.
Okay.
Elric drew a middle finger.
Just trying to be clear.
I don't think we can award any points for that.
Okay. Ooh, no, Rob got creative.
Now, Rob got creative and close. So, you
Isn't
know
that
what?
Kill us?
I think we should give Rob 2 points for
what?
That.
Do you know what the symbol is? Because it's kind of like a circle with some like a line in the top and then like lines through the bottom. Because when we used to work here for the website, remember somebody drew this on the front door?
On the front door.
So that's the only reason I remember it.
So here's the actual one. So I'm going to award Rob 2 points because
that's right.
Circle
what do you think
with
that?
Right, upside down.
Brian, this cannot stand. That's not even in the same ballpark. I mean, I don't care if Rob gets a point. Yeah. Don't get me wrong, but
Rob,
this is not even on the ballpark.
That's somewhat.
That looks bring up kill. That's more like the kill
line. I'll give him 1 point for that. You know what? Rob gets a point for that.
If you turn that upside down, it looks a little bit like...
It looks like he vaguely remembers.
Vaguely
it does not.
Turn it up right then.
Oh.
Okay, right, so we are going to do a lightning round here with the top two players. So please talk amongst yourselves while I quickly tally who are our top two players for
got
this
the
game.
Most points.
Well, it's not me.
Who has the most points tonight?
Can I tell a quick story just while they're coming?
Yes,
please.
We were talking before about our like shameful like things that we forget. This wasn't a dead right. This was back in college. They had a general movie trivia night. And so, of course, I went, and it's, you know, it's just stuff like, you know, who's the star of Die Hard? And, you know, there's a lot of, like, just basic, kind of easy stuff. And then, like, in shocker, what kind of animal does Horace Pinker sacrifice? And everybody's like, John Frank, I'm like, I have no idea.
I did
not know it was a cat. And I just, I blanked. And I'm like, that's a terrible not thing. Only, I mean, even if that was a dead right question, that would be kind of
hard,
a little deep cut, you know. It was like that's a specific thing about a not beloved, you know.
Yeah,
but it's, you know, anybody who knows me knows how much I love Shocker, but I could not think of it for the
that's
life
pretty
of
great
me. I mean, we ended up winning anyway. We won because there was a tie, and we won because I could spell Schwarzenegger.
Oh, no. We had a couple just trivia nights. I mean, you did what was the trivia you did for Community?
Community trivia, and Devin,
and that they
and
did
the
a
badass digest.
And that was fun.
I did a lot better at that.
Yeah. I found myself, that was much more my
comfort zone. Yeah, I was hoping we could do that more, but Devin lived so far away, he didn't.
It was tough for him to get. Yeah, he's slacking, keeping it going.
We even had Pavel on our team for Community trivia, and we didn't get it.
Oh,
right
Jesus.
At all.
So our winners or our two top players so far tonight are Brian Collins and Rob Galuza.
Yeah, surprised.
You guys will go into the lightning round. And Jared and I started doing the lightning round, I guess, about 3 years ago now.
Yeah.
And we started doing this because otherwise we discovered that one team would always win.
Like, once again, it's a zombie redneck.
It's trying to, you know, yeah, we were trying
Wait,
to like level
didn't
the playing
do
ground.
Double down. This is
no.
the,
we didn't.
I want to share with people the hell that is double down. Our team, who's totally against it. They one day just brought in this new rule. Where you could suddenly, if you thought you got all the ones right, like you got all eight right, you could say double down. And the problem with double down, though, is if you get it wrong, you get zero.
Yes.
But the only problem, doing it once in a game, that's one thing, but like being able to do it anytime, it's like if you have a confident team, you're going to fucking destroy people.
Yes.
It hasn't actually come to be.
No.
That no.
People,
so I, even though I hated it and told it against both of you personally,
I think you
are right that it's not so bad.
And it's actually,
it's not so bad.
It's fun because you got a team that ordinarily doesn't come up all that much,
right?
You know, like you had the topic happened to be something that somebody on their team was an expert
they
on,
go,
and
yeah.
they get it, and yeah. it's like they win the round.
No, Skin Suit like, Riot, they always really close.
But
to
I know there's some trivia places that would let you do that one time in that
right.
the whole day. Yeah. Like you get one chance to use your little set. But I get it.
I like that it makes things very interesting. It mixes things up in a really interesting way.
And it's just fucking hilarious when somebody doubles down and they get zero.
Yes, it gets so upset.
When I the one that I co-hosted. Somebody did that, and it made me so happy.
Yes,
we announced
them. It was my team. Just so embarrassed, I was like, "Blood spread about it. You double down, and you got one wrong."
Yeah, we publicly shame when you double down,
and we reward.
And we reward if you double down and get right. We also tell everybody, but we always announce the double downs just because it's more fun to cheer or pity.
But that was something where I, strangely enough, I was having a lunch with an old friend who brought an old friend with him. And we were all just sitting around talking about old times and stuff. And it turned out we all were hosting trivia in our respective kind of neighborhoods. And his friend said, "Oh, well, we have this double down thing." And I said, "Whoa, what is that?"
Nice.
And she described it. And I was like, I texted Becca from the lunch.
Yeah, he texted me at lunch. She was like, "We're doing this."
Person, and she just told me about this double down thing. And we're doing this. And she was like, "Whoa, yes.
This is so cool.
This is on. That shit is on." And so the double down has become like a real favorite.
So the lightning round we started doing a couple years ago because we kept seeing the same teams. But what we discovered is that just because teams like Brian Collins's team or the Susan Lucio Fulci team, because they're really good,
Boggy Creek,
because if they're really good at like focused questions where we ask a question and then they get to think about what organ Udo Kier wants to fuck for, you know, 30 seconds, that does not mean that they are good with quick trivia.
Yeah. Right, right. There's that angle. And then the other part of it was that you reached a point where if there was one team that was just dominating the game and you're up to round six or you're up to round seven or something and you already know that Boggy Creek has won three rounds and all the other rounds have gone to random teams, they're going to win.
Yes.
And so the morale would drop. Mm-hmm. As it got along, everybody would just kind of like, it would get shiftless and people would get kind of discouraged.
Why would we stay for the final round?
Why do
we
stay? Buggy, you want to let it go home.
Yeah. You see people actually like folding up their chairs and leaving early and stuff. And it was really kind of discouraging. And so it was both to respond to the idea of the lightning round thing, which as Brian has seen now, is that not everybody can go from the brain to the hand to the mouth.
I'm really bad at that.
But it really was to kind of keep things interesting so that that way at the end of the night, it's anybody's game in terms of the last two. So usually it's points, most points versus
most rounds won.
And in some cases, it's just first place and second place because most points and most rounds ends up being Boggy Creek.
And there's a beautiful unwritten rule of this, which it's always holds true, which is you'll be in a line and you're lining up against the other team, and whatever the question in the person in front of you is getting, you always know that answer.
And then you get up.
And you're like going crazy, and you'll turn to other people and mouth the word, and you're always right. And but when your number comes, you're always fucked.
Yep, I almost
lost
my mind on the name of Mrs. Max Cat from Black Christmas. I'm like, how do you not know this, Robert?
That's one of those ones I wouldn't get that. Right now, I'm blanking on it again.
Come on, Claude, you little shit.
Claude.
How can you never remember that line? Come on, Claude, you little shit.
I watch the movie twice a year, but I never remember it. But the lightning, I mean, there are some people on my team, and I'm sure on all the teams, that are just notoriously bad at the lightning idea. Like, they cannot, like, they're perfectly great players.
Yeah.
For the, you know, Rebecca was saying, when you have time to think, but they just cannot do it. And last month, a tie score, lightning round, and Elise went up for our team. And Elise is one of those people that just hates it, like dreads it. Will not, like, if we have a tiebreaker for a round, she doesn't want to go.
Right.
And it came down to her. And I'm already kind of turning to, I think it was Sean or Garo. I'm just like, oh, well, like, we lose by a point again because, you know, Elise just, and I forget what it
she
was.
Got it.
Wasn't Buffy? It happened to be one of her. It was the new Insidious.
The new Insidious.
Yeah, because the topic was subtitles. Like, you name a subtitle.
The
franchise.
Do you know who she beat on my team?
No. Oh, and she was it Parker?
It could have been
Parker.
I
think it was Parker. Yeah.
No, if it wasn't Parker,
Jesus. Yeah. Sorry, Parker. Sorry. It was somebody. It was Elric.
That wasn't me because I got it wrong.
So like, we were happier for her getting it. Even if we end up losing, we still would have been happier for her getting one, finally, than we were about winning.
And tiebreakers are pretty much lightning rounds, but just one.
Yeah.
And we try to make it easy. We try to make it something. Because the worst thing in the world is a tiebreaker where you bring up if there's a tiebreaker, it's generally one, you know, two teams or three teams. Sometimes it's a whole bunch because the round was just too damn easy.
Yeah.
And what we do is we ask a simple question or, you know,
quick fire. Sequel, yeah. Something subtitle, you should go with.
Who directed Halloween?
Yeah. Right. Something simple so that you can get, you know, and that you, the last thing you want is to them be standing there not knowing. Like, somebody has to know the answer. And so it's about speed and being able to get, you know, hit the bell and get it.
So usually we have a bell, but that is already packed to go to Phoenix because we will be doing this at Phoenix this weekend.
That's right.
And so before we go into the lightning round, I will say Jared and I, we travel with this. So like, we did Dead Right Horror Trivia Night at Texas Frightmare this year. We're taking it to Mad Monster Party in Phoenix. We're doing at Midsummer Scream in Long Beach in just a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So if you follow us on Facebook, you can find us where we're heading and where our next games will be.
All right, let's go down as a team of ringers.
So can they ring in by slapping Elric?
They can. I kind of like that. We're just going to do both hands on the table and raise your hand.
Okay.
So these, we're doing taglines.
Poster taglines.
Poster taglines.
Yeah, this is a tough one.
And I will say some of these have been used in past. Okay. So you may have heard these before.
Yes.
But we wanted to make it super simple for you guys. And we are just going to go by who raises their hand first. And the other rule is that if you raise your hand and answer and get it wrong, the other person automatically gets the point. They don't even have to respond. They just automatically get the point.
All
right. Okay, guys.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the lightning round.
Question one. It's a tagline, poster tagline. Today the pond, tomorrow the world. Today the pond, tomorrow the world. When no one gets it, we tell them it's frogs and shame them and move on.
Yes.
Frogs? Okay. Because they should have frogs.
Oh, I do. It's
all
Reed.
Okay.
No, I love frogs, but yeah,
all women give a shit about all the Reed movies.
Fair enough.
Available Sam Elliott, too.
Scream Factory.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. No, is that
Sam Elliott?
Yeah, that's Sam Elliott. I don't think that's the Reed one. I think it's Sam
Reed's
Elliott.
Reed's in Venom.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, you're right. Reed is Venom.
I win.
It's the snake one. You're right. You're right.
Yeah, I was going to let that slide.
I already lost. Whatever.
Okay, number two. Who will survive and what will be left of them?
Oh, I used a whole bunch of times. shit.
You have to raise your hand.
I know.
Who will survive and what will be left of them?
Texas Chainsaw?
Correct.
Points, Brian Collins.
I don't know.
I think I've used another one, so that's why I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah, it's like that's the funny thing is something is so famous that you're like, it can't be Texas Chainsaw.
Right. No, these are quick. You're supposed to immediately come up with these.
Yeah, frogs. I mean, we're all thinking about frogs.
Well, I will say that Becca gave me this thing, this mandate up front. She was like, let's make this a little easier so that the folks at home will have a chance.
Brian and I aren't exactly lightning when it comes to tagline.
So Jared's like, oh, easy. Let me ask you about the Spielberg movie that nobody's seen. That's not available on DVD or VHS.
And you will remember what I told you about the lightning round. I said it would be Rob versus Brian.
Yes, you did. Oh, he did. All right. He said it would come down to that.
Thanks for the lack of faith.
Sorry.
Yeah, just, Paula, he didn't know.
Well, when she's, because I was, all of mine were as hard as usual, all of my questions, and I did twice as many questions.
Yeah, and we actually have a ton of questions that we didn't use tonight, so that's going to be around next month.
Oh, yeah, easily. and so mine were hard and hers were
easy. Not easy. They're still
easy
they're
to Jared
mid-range.
Is still like at least intermediate level.
I always like to think, could 20% of the room get it?
Yeah.
That's kind of what I
whenever
aim
I host,
for.
I'm always realizing when I get up there, like, oh, like what I think is easy. I mean, that's why it's good that you guys get a feel for it and you do it every month. Mm-hmm. But anytime I do a guest round or whatever, it's always like, oh, I'll make it easy. And then I just see the looks on people's faces. Like,
that's been a learning curve.
It's very difficult.
Directed by, because it's the only thing I would always get right, and they never fucking do it. In years, they've almost never done whole rounds where it's like, who directed that?
Nope.
And I would fucking kill.
Okay.
Rami.
Number three.
All right.
Gary Sherman.
Poster tagline. Buy a bag, go home in a box.
Popcorn.
Point to Rob.
Number four. Oh, gee. Really?
Yes.
Come on. All right. Just when you thought it was safe to go.
Oh, Jaws 2.
Jaws 2.
Oh, nice.
Rob G.
Pay to get in, pray to get out. Pay to get in, pray to get out. And the answer is Funhouse. Moving on to the next one.
I would have said Popcorn if it hadn't already come up.
Yeah, exactly. It's another theater movie.
Great poster, by the way, with a scary killer clown on it that is not in the movie.
Oh,
that's right. Damn it.
Okay. Ding dong, you're dead.
House 2. The second story.
I think he lost it on that one.
That's the first one.
Is it House 1?
It's House 1.
Oh,
House 1.
It was on the VHS cover.
Which means the point goes to
Rob. Damn it.
That one I knew.
Yeah.
If you kept your damn mouth shut.
I just like,
House 2.
I was a second later.
Yeah. Okay. The good news is your dates are here. That was Collins.
Night of the Creeps. John will never eat shish kebab again.
Happy birthday to me.
Happy birthday to
Collins.
Me.
Was
it first? Sorry.
No, I saw it.
No, you were a second.
It was a second.
It was a second.
It's hard without the bell.
I know. No. We need the bell. People end up mashing their fingers. Like, seen so many people walk away with, like, injured fingers.
I literally drew blood on Andrew Cash's hand.
I remember that. They crushed each other's hands.
He was like, I don't care, I'm bleeding, but I got it right.
Okay. Last one, and it's tied, guys. It's tied. This is it.
This is it.
They will make cemeteries their cathedrals and cities. Rob.
Demons.
Yes!
Yeah, correct.
Rob Galuzzo has won.
Shockwaves
Dead Right Horror Trivia.
Woo. Oh, man. All right.
Very nice. Wow. Congratulations.
You have won the glory.
That seems like an upset. That's a good job.
I get all your respect.
Yeah.
And I have some Red Central Presents Blu-rays to give you. I have Terrifier and... No, it's great.
So thank you guys. Please follow Dead Right Horror Trivia Night on Facebook. Jared, Ryan, and I, we have stuff in the works on this. We travel around with this. Yes. Ryan took it to the Overlook this year. And we have a bunch of other festivals
and
conventions.
I guess we should, the Midsummer Stream is the next
thing. Actually, Mad Monster Party.
Mad Monster Party in Arizona.
Saturday night in Arizona.
Right.
And then.
I'm not going to be there for that, but also there will be a My Favorite Horror Movie
panel
and a booth, which I wrote a chapter for that and cannot make it, but there will be some other writers will be there. So
And then we will be doing Dead Right Horror Trivia Night at the VIP party at Midsummer Scream.
Yes.
And you can come to our monthly show, which is usually the third Thursday of every month in Los Angeles at Blast from the Past, and you can see all these fine people there.
There you go. And once again, earbudtheater.com. Listen to The Current, which it's my ode to aquatic horror. It's clearly kind of Jaws-ish and The Raft-ish, and it's got some Blood Beach and Piranha and some other fun stuff in there as in terms of inspirations.
How about frogs?
Frogs.
Lots of frogs.
Lots and lots of frogs, starring Oliver Reed.
Yeah.
I just want to plug that because I'm really proud of it, and it just came out this week. So.
Shout out to Brian Collins' phone case, which I just noticed is actually Horace Pinker's...
Yes, his jumpsuit.
Holy shit! Yes. That is... Oh, my gosh.
Yep.
Cool. That's next level.
Where would you even get something?
Yeah, where'd you get
something bubble.
Red bubble.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's where mine came from. Yeah. I have it is Vigo. Mine came from the same site.
I got my Time Cop shirt from Redbubble. Nice. Sorry, guys, I had to mention Time Cop.
No,
Time Cop had to be thrown in.
And another plug for your book, still. It's still out there.
Yeah, Collins.
I updated it a little bit, because some of the movies, I always put, like, where you can find it, like, distributed by Shout Factory or whoever. So some of those changed, I've updated with that, a few other little nips and tucks.
I mean, Kathy's Curse now had to be
Kathy's Curse,
from Severed Films.
That was the best one, because I got to update it from available on YouTube, and looking like shit, to available on a beautiful Blu-ray with a very, very important guest commentary.
And credits, new credits.
Yeah.
And new credits, yeah.
Yes, made by Brian Collins.
Yeah, I recreated because Kathy's Curse got cut for U.S. and they just added in title cards to kind of explain
the
all
plot.
The stuff and poorly. So I recreated those for the new cut because they put both cuts on there. So.
And I also want to plug Note for Note Music, who just released the soundtrack for Jackals.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
Which we had, which we had
Jared on for earlier.
Yes, last year. Mm-hmm. But it's Anton Senko, and it's the first soundtrack release for the first movie that I ever wrote. So it was a big moment.
And you're
for
a
me.
Big soundtrack guy.
I am
a big
huge
deal.
Soundtrack guy. I post, I have this thing called Film Score Daily that I do where I take pictures on Instagram. I don't know why I do it, but I've been doing it for actually the anniversary of the 2-year anniversary will be, I think, next Saturday. But I'm a big film score nerd, and so last night I got to sign. I was at Dark Delicacies earlier this week, and got to sign soundtrack albums for the movie that I wrote, which was pretty damn amazing. So Jackals, Anton Senko, and Note for Note Music, which is a brand new soundtrack label. They've only been around, I think, this year, and they're great. They're grabbing some really great stuff, and I have to give them a little bit of a shout out. And they're available. They have noteformusic.com, and you can get their stuff on Amazon and soundtrack retailers.
Wow.
And only Brian nailed the shirt for the day because it is Friday the 13th.
When people are listening
to this.
Yeah.
It's
on
Friday.
Yeah,
I'm wearing my fluffy shirt.
We all forgot.
And I think I mentioned at the top, but last plug, if you're in LA, this Tuesday, July 17th, come see To Hell and Back, the Kane Hodder story at the Chinese Six.
Mm-hmm. I will be there.
It's a
great theater.
Public screening, so come on down.
Wait, this goes out Friday, right?
Yes.
Okay, then also come to... let's just keep plugging for like an hour.
Sure, plug.
I'm hosting a screening of Demon Knight at the TCL Chinese
Tales from
Sunday
the Crypt
night.
Presents.
Tales from the Crypt presents Demon Knight. And we have Ernest Dickerson. We have the screenwriters. We have John Kasser?
I think it's Kasser.
The voice of the Crypt Keeper and Charles Fleischer are all coming for a Q&A.
That's
so that's Sunday night. That's Sunday the 15th at the TCL Chinese. So
very cool.
Buy your tickets for that.
There you go.
All right. Excellent.
And there's also trivia, but I make it very, very easy.
Yes, you do.
Yes.
I will ask, like, what movie are we seeing? Because
stuff. I occasionally help.
Yeah.
I occasionally help. We start texting or IMing each other.
And I'll be like, Jazz, it's too hard for these people.
So we will see you guys on the other side of Mad Monster Party.
Yep.
So thank you guys so much. Please like us on Facebook and follow us on iTunes and Twitter and all that grand stuff. See you guys. Thank you.
Thank you.